I'm going to call the Pine City Planning Commission meeting of Wednesday, September 15th, to order. And we need to establish a quorum, starting with you, Commissioner Linda Maggard.
Commissioner Dennis Davis.
Commissioner Virginia Glasson.
Commissioner Gloria Fleming, Vice Chair. John Thomas called, and he won't be able to make it. He's trucking in Elk right now. Okay, Dennis, would you like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance? We do have a quorum.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay. Added number four is added agenda items. Does anybody have anything they want to add to the agenda? Okay. Did you need to add anything to our agenda?
Oh.
Okay. All right. Public comments for items not on the agenda. Do you have a public comment?
No, not a single one.
All right, just moving on.
Ashley works at the Sewer and Water District.
Hello. Okay. Approval of the August 18th Planning Commission meeting minutes. Did everybody get a chance to look at them?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Any corrections or?
I didn't note any. Mm-hmm. I'm fine out here in the audience.
Okay. Could I have a motion to approve those then?
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes as they stand.
I second it. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Now, number seven, discussion of the other remaining drafts and review the zoning and schedule of meetings, etc. Take it away, Deborah.
Okay, well, we've set a schedule that's fairly aggressive. And the first thing I want to say is that if we start on a topic in a meeting and we feel we need to give it more discussion, we're not going to stay till midnight because we don't think that's productive, but we can continue that discussion to the next meeting. And we've left some opportunities for extra meetings or, you know, we'll catch up. But I don't want anybody to think that they're going to be overloaded. Even though it's an aggressive schedule, we're going to be sensible about it, mainly because I don't like to stay up late. So, you know, and I think everybody's agreeable to that.
If you don't have a schedule in the future meetings, I've got one here.
I've made one, but I don't need one.
Is it just one page?
Do you have an extra meeting, Patty?
Donna came in. She's our manager now.
I do have a question on this.
One more.
Do you have any?
Yep.
Thank you.
There's
a top.
Okay. Like I said, I have on the where it says, for example, we have a regular meeting and then we have an open house.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at 4 hours per meeting.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. But we'll be done by 8. And the reason we need to do that is we typically, just like we did in the comp plan process, we prep the planning commission on how the open house is going to occur, some of the questions that might come up, contact from the public that we've had in advance so that you're not sandbagged by questions that we know about but you don't know about. So we make sure that everything is set up. And then for the open house, we'll do it just like we did with the comp plan. There'll be tables, and if you remember, we encouraged every table to participate. Even if they didn't raise their hand, we encouraged questions because once things got rolling, people saw that, yeah, they had a need to have a vested interest and they participated. Mm-hmm. So we'll run it the same way we did the comp plan to get as many public comments as possible, particularly with the zoning ordinance. Things that affect property are a little different than the more ephemeral things of policies and goals, things like mm-hmm. that. So we should have good, healthy discussion.
You did get word that I won't be here, that we
yes.
have the 22nd, 23rd.
Yes.
So
okay, will we have a quorum?
For some, like open houses, we don't need a quorum unless
okay.
we're making decisions.
Okay.
It's best, I would love to have you there every single time, but sometimes you can't.
Okay.
Excuse my ignorance, the TAC is invited. Who's the TAC?
It's the Technical Advisory Committee, made up of agency people, engineers.
That's that one that's got 100 people on it.
Right, right.
Is there a list of the people that are on that?
Yes.
Could I
sure.
that? I'd like to have it. I don't know about anybody else.
Just for informational purposes, I don't think I'll make the October 20th.
Okay.
Other than that, I don't know of any conflict.
I think I'm okay on the rest of them.
Yeah, we want to begin those discussions, and then we'll see where the public wants to focus their greatest interest. But we need to go through all of them. And for you guys, it's going to be a little repetitive. For example, tonight we're going to go through the zoning ordinance, but at the open house I'm going to do the same thing, mm-hmm. so that the public has an opportunity. That may not be as in-depth. It may be more of a global discussion, but it's necessary for me to do that to meet state law, to say that we have touched on the issues that are before the community.
Okay. This one on the 23rd now, is that you're not expecting a big crowd for that one?
Next week.
Yeah.
Not sure. I haven't had a lot of contact so far. Mostly enforcement complaints. I haven't had calls from developers. I had one call from a developer about what the county's doing with destination resorts and what we're doing with floodplains, but nothing that I would assume. So far. Mm-hmm. And it's early in the process.
Yeah.
That'll just be coming out on Tuesday for that.
Yeah.
So all the meetings are scheduled here with the exception of that one at this point.
Yes. And we may be flexible here.
Which one?
The one that's noted on here. Mid-state.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I didn't know what that. I thought it was in reference to this.
Well, maybe I'm not following.
Okay, where it says Med-Say Electric Conference Room.
Yeah, isn't that just pointed out so that
on
everybody
the 16th.
Knows?
Yeah, that's where it's going to be held.
Yeah, okay, instead of here.
Okay. Yeah, because this room is being used.
Okay, gotcha.
Oh,
okay. And if we see that we're getting them packed to the walls, then we'll go back to the senior center.
Okay.
But for now, I'd like to see where things shake out.
All right.
Yeah, so that's what we have.
Yeah, once you get to the meeting after the public hearings start too, if you remember from the comprehensive plan, depending upon the input you get, the issues that come up, and because you continue those hearings on the record, that's where it always gets kind of fuzzy and malleable
as
well.
People out, yeah.
Exactly, because you don't know how many issues are going to come up, mm-hmm. and maybe you need to continue an issue to another hearing, so sometimes they get pushed. So
yeah, okay,
that's where it really gets flexible.
Okay, where are we, Gloria? Oh, we're talking about the schedule. Oh, we're still in number 7.
Right.
Well, shall we launch into the zoning ordinance?
I wanted to pick up here on our compliance study, which is part of this and recent from DLCD.
Okay.
Just
yeah. We received, and this is a good thing because I got logged onto your internet, which is really handy. But we did receive a letter from DLCD saying that our LCD, that our comprehensive plan submittal was complete, which is a good thing because a lot of times, you know, there's things they could pick on. But it's complete, and their scheduled set of hearings is forecasted so that they're going to go through their review and hold hearings, and then at the end of the process, the commission, the Land Conservation and Development Commission, will receive a recommendation from DLCD on whether to approve or not approve our application. And in the meantime, there may be things they want us to tweak, which isn't unusual, but I'm not aware of anything at all yet.
Mm.
So they'll put together a group of people on their side to review our submittal, take a look at the comp plan, our policies and goals, and all the supporting documents, and then they'll get back to us. So far, I forwarded that document to you, and then we can print that out for the next Planning Commission so everybody has a hard copy or
okay.
forward it to everyone else.
Great. We did forward it on to the City Council.
Good. Any questions on that? Okay. So we're going to zip to zoning.
Which was the
I kind of want to get through the zoning first because if we have to, if we have to slip anything to a next meeting, then it'll be a smaller item. Hang on, I just wanted to look up one thing.
One thing right off the bat, is there any way of putting together a simpler version for the public? You know, there's so much legalese in here, and that's been one of the problems that people have always had in dealing with any government entity. It's just, you know, yeah. I just want to know how to do it, or what I, you know, just in simple terms. So then if there's anything more complicated, it's not a simple thing, then they need to know the other stuff. But
yeah.
Is there anybody to do like a handbook that's a simplified version so people understand?
Yeah, there is. And a lot of times if you use like a spreadsheet chart, here's your zone, here's what's allowed in a condensed version, minimum lot size and height, those are the things that people typically ask for. We could certainly do that. Now, we have some of that in here, but one of the things that I think you'll see on page 21, the use charts, those are the quickie ways that people can see what happens in the various zones. And yeah, these are the simple charts. So if somebody in the community says, hey, I just want the guts, we could start here, pull that out for them. But we're required by law to make sure we have definitions that support the information, and there's a lot of legalese in here. And it's funny you mentioned skinnying it down. We received comments from the county that they thought it was too simple. And we responded back that for a new city, we don't need a lot of gobbledygook.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we got comments through the comprehensive plan process that people didn't like the county code.
No.
So this is stylized for Lapine, very straightforward approach. As we go through this process, if you want to expand things or shrink things, we can do that.
What a lot of jurisdictions do as well is for each zone, for the uses, like Deborah just pointed out, that chart, it makes it very simple. What can I do? What can't I do in the zone? For the permitting processes, whether it's like a conditional use permit or a site plan review or a subdivision, what they end up doing is taking and creating a pamphlet that says conditional use permit. Here's what you need to do, and it just bullet points the major things without reading all the legalese. Mm-hmm. So you can give people the code and say that read this first and then go through the code. And it just
well, you know, developers that have worked in a certain area are familiar, and it's no big deal to them.
Mm-hmm.
But for somebody that moves into and wants to put a house, and, I mean, geez.
Well,
they should have gone in circles. And then they got to go to the sewer and they got to go to the water. You know, I mean, it just gets crazy.
There are two things. One, the code, which regulates everything, and then the implementation of how you use it. And some of the things that you're talking about will be addressed through the permit application, which will list all the things you need to do X. Some of that will be made simple through the development of the application form. In here, I think your question is a good one, and if the Planning Commission agrees, I think doing a quickie chart, pulling that out so there's kind of a guts for the public to see in terms of what's allowed in each zone, size of lot and height, just a simple three-page thing, we could easily do that.
I think the public would really appreciate it, especially in our meetings, you know.
Yeah. But got to have all this other legal stuff.
Right. And that could be explained.
Okay, so I'm going to guide you through this generally, and I want to start with the table of contents because I think there's a lot of things we'll just skip over that, you know, severability and amendments and things like that. I don't think that's as important as understanding what's allowed in each zone. And so when you look at the table of contents, you've got the purpose and scope, things that explain why we're doing this in the first place, and it kind of reflects upon the language that we use in the comp plan. And then we've got the community development objectives. These are things that came out in the comprehensive plan that are common sense. You know, we want Lapine to retain its livability. We want development to do well here. We want economic development, but not at any cost. Those kinds of statements are in the community development objectives. And you may, if you have comments on that, let me know. Then you have definitions, which is the boring stuff. What is a house? What is a car? Things like that. And then the zoning zones themselves on page 20. Are you comfortable going to page 20? We'll start there.
I want to ask one thing that sticks out here on page 7.
Page 7.
Is that common to pick out the adult entertainment business as a require a paragraph for?
On page 20?
I have no opinion on page 7.
Where it says 11, control the development of location. I actually read that too. The adult entertainment establishments need to public health, safety, and welfare of the community, especially if it's minors.
And the reason why I'm saying is that reads more like, I don't know if there's facts to back that up or if that's someone's opinion or if it's something that is a... Is that allowed? Or you could say, could you say to control the development of stockyards within town because they stink and they do this and they do that. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. This is an area that always gets a lot of scrutiny, and some of these concepts probably need to be looked at again because there are new laws about regulating adult businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially it's a hands-off approach in Oregon.
Mm-hmm. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we'll take another look at this to make
sure. I happen to personally agree with this, but I...
But I don't...
I was uncomfortable with the way it's worded.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, you know.
If we take it out, and I'll double-check with the law, but... If we take it out, it doesn't reduce the effectiveness because you're limited in what you can do anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll double check that. Did it seem a little parochial? Seems a little parochial.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Sound like one of the
what
notes.
Page is that on?
Page 7. Number 11.
Now you're going to get into strip clubs, I guess.
But it's not the way it's written. It's an objective, or I guess a statement. It's not a requirement. It's not a standard. So, again, I always think, like, how do you translate those into standards? And you end up creating a zone. Well, you can't zone against them. What you do is zone for them. You say, here's where they are, so that then they're not allowed in the places where you didn't list.
And about things like saying minimizing the blighting impact of such uses, some people would take exception.
Right next to the school, for example.
Yeah.
Well, there may be loaded words here that we could easily...
Yeah. Secondary effects, effects, including unhealthy conditions, spread of disease, and crime. Well, the crime element, maybe, but, you know, I don't know. It was just something that feels funny about
gotcha.
It.
That's
okay.
Right.
We'll check that.
It's like, are we going to have... Then a red light district that
similar to what you just said, is you create a zone. Because remember, the way zoning ordinances work, if you list something, as we go through this is maybe key to uses, is when something is listed as being allowed in one zone, and it's not allowed and it's not listed in the other zone, that means it's to the forethought that you don't want that use in that area. So the only way to keep those types of uses out of a commercial area so that you might not want it out is to zone for it. So you end up creating a de facto.
Right.
So I'm sure other places have done it. I wonder if there's any other kind of wording that might.
Well, I may just take that out. It is a little loaded because it doesn't it doesn't hurt to take it out. It may cause more problems leaving it in.
You could also just say control of development location of adult entertainment establishments.
Can't you? Can you just say that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't have a problem with that at all.
Yeah, I don't either.
Good comment.
No explanation.
I love that word disease, though. How often do you get to put that in the zoning ordinance?
I'm very.
No, it's so boring otherwise. Okay, so on page 20, what you'll see are the full names of the zones that we're going to regulate, and the short name, which is the code, the acronym. Mm-hmm. It matches pretty much our comprehensive plan. Mm-hmm. So there's a rhyme to madness.
It works.
The one thing that I haven't added in yet, and this is a comment from the county, is they're very concerned about their efforts in their master planned area, that those efforts aren't lost. And I think they have a good point. I think the community and the people who own property out there bought underneath master plan conditions, and it would probably make a lot of sense to transfer those regulations for that master plan neighborhood into this zoning ordinance.
Could you say that again? I didn't.
Yeah.
The county went through a giant master planning process.
Yeah. Oh, that, yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And it wouldn't make a whole lot of sense to just dismantle that. So to protect property rights for the people who are out there and the investment in that master planning process, it makes sense to take that part of the county code and pull it in. And I wanted to discuss that with you. I haven't done it yet, but that was a comment we received from the county.
I don't know. See, that's one of the things that started this whole thing, was that when they made this master plan, they got a lot of input from the city of La Pine area people, mm-hmm. and then when they had did their master plan, not taking our ideas into it. So, and there's only, I mean, how much of that property is actually still owned and how much has been sold?
What has been sold is what you see is pretty much as developed.
Right.
There's a big chunk that's not.
Right. So, given the circumstances of that, I mean, it's not going to affect property owners at this time. It seems like if there were to be any changes made, you know, if we were to negotiate any changes, now would be the time to do it before the property gets sold and those people get in there with that idea.
That would be the process, but give me an idea of some of the things that you're thinking of you'd want to change.
Well, I know, you know, you've got the plant area going on the other side of 97,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. We have the linkage. We got that.
Well, one of the things we did that was changed was the corridor mm-hmm. for wildlife.
So we have to recognize that.
That's already been changed.
Yeah, but it's not in text yet, so we would make that change in the text
mm-hmm.
so that it's recognized.
What I remember from the comp plan discussions, too, because there was, and this is my perception, some of it was an anti-county sentiment, just an anti-county sentiment from some of the conversations that we had. Others, though, were specific, saying, you know, it's not the density that we wanted, meaning the small lots
right.
and the cramming everything in there. And the county's trying to, through the master plan, balancing it off, saying, well, but we're going to have public open spaces rather than larger spaces on your own lot.
So through the comp plan process, we told the county, essentially, you're going to have to change your master plan to accept this wider swath, and then you have a transition area here that would require a different type of development than what they had thought they were going to do in the
right.
beginning, because that made sense. We didn't change really too much down here, and this is where most of the development is now.
What's that white swath with the green?
This is an open space mm-hmm. connector to the Lapine Wayside from this habitat along the
wildlife mm-hmm. corridor.
We widened it. It was about 200 feet wide.
Crescent Creek subdivision.
Down.
About.
Right there.
Okay, so this is heading.
Yeah.
Are there any, has anybody discussed with ODOT about a wildlife crossing with that, along with that Wikia junction overpass that's being built?
Yeah, they were on our tack. Oh, you mean with the overpass?
Yeah, because it comes down 97 quite a ways now.
No.
Yeah, not with this. With this, we did, because ODOT was on our tack. We haven't talked about...
You're trying to make this a $50 million project?
No, I'm just asking the question if someone's going to bring it up.
Well, I'll tell you what, when a deer crosses and a train's at grade, the deer's got an issue.
Yes, he does.
And you can't make a deer crossing for a train.
Well, there was some discussion about pedestrian and animal crossings up in the neighborhood of the end of Kegel.
The Kegel?
Yeah. Yeah, you talked to me about that.
In terms of implementing a zoning regulation, we for sure are going to change the county's master plan by the imposition of the wider open space in the mixed-use transition area. If you want to take some time and think about other things that you think need fixing there, let us know.
Well, in general, there was some allowance for apartments or something like that, more dense.
In the transition area?
Yeah, on the north, along Burgess Road.
Okay, because I couldn't remember where that was. Because that would kind of offset some of our plans, you know, for keeping the larger lots. If you had some areas where they were, that was more dense, like the senior center area and all that kind of stuff. So, but I wasn't sure. So they did allow for that, yeah.
It's something, what I've seen in the past, just as an example, is when you see neighborhoods where there were developed years and years and years ago, where you had half-acre lot sizes because that's the size you needed to have a septic system on, and then sewer system gets brought into the area, and then jurisdictions look at creating more density inside their city, and you can do it now because you have sewer connection, is there's that fine line balance of, even though you could, should you allow each one of those half-acre lots to be developed or, say, chopped into three pieces because you can do it because you have a sewer connection, but it changes the character of the neighborhood.
Right.
So I think that's kind of what Deborah's getting at is, you know, when I look at that, and I'll just throw this out there, is that where you have the existing neighborhood in the southern half of that county area, that may be an area where you really embrace the county's master plan because there's already a development pattern, there's some expectation there. But in the north where we've made changes, maybe that's where you create zoning that they have to rethink their master plan.
Well, and that was one of the things they pushed was the cost, and that's why they wanted the higher density, was, you know, for the sewer hookup costs and that. But that is not, that was not the philosophy of most of the people of La Pine.
I know one of the driving influences that the county used.
Well, I know one thing I was going to say before, just because it made me think of it. And I wanted to make all committees to be warned. While these have always been taped, we are moving toward they go online like by tomorrow. And while they've always been taped and everything you say is public, I just, as a courtesy, because you're volunteers, that you realize that this is will be, at some point, these will be on our websites to where literally by noon tomorrow, people can sit if they want and listen to it. They always got a committee on a disc. But that's a lot of work, and no one ever did it speak of. But it's easy to just go online on our website and click on it. So I just want all volunteers to know that anything you say, you know, is out in the world for everyone to hear, write, and quote. No one said anything they shouldn't, but I just doing that as a courtesy to folks.
And that starts tomorrow?
Well, just this meeting may go on, so just remember that whatever you say.
Okay, because I had told John he could probably come in and get a disc.
You can always get a disc.
Yeah. Okay.
This is just going to be more people who have access to what's being said.
Okay.
So just, I do that to, just so that you know.
You remember the sewer transfer credit program? The county is doing that. And they wanted to focus those transfer credits on land they owned within the urban growth under city limits. And so the master plan had that in mind, is to be able to provide land where the density that is higher outside the city could come in and be more urban. And so the county's going to be very concerned about things that reduce their potential to have that credit transfer system work. Now, one of the things we did that the county liked was when we took away land for open, made it more open space, in the hatch-locked area, we gave them an opportunity to do more discrete master planning there and gain back the density where it made sense. But if you'd like us to look a little bit at how there may be greater compatibility with the rest of La Pine and looking at where there might be some suitable tweaks, we could certainly do that. We should probably do that together and have that be an item. If that's what you want to do, there would be great pushback from the county.
That's my idea.
What was your question? Just your question.
Well,
not your speech.
I'm just talking about it. Originally, my question was about the density of the apartments, because I originally thought there was apartments in there somewhere. And
Did you think the lots are too small or too big? Or
that was the objection from the very beginning.
You think them are too small, or which, too big or too small?
Too small. The developed areas so far, when we started seeing them go in,
okay,
that was the objection of the community, because when we went to the meetings, we were reassured that the lots would not be that small.
And you're saying the county won't push back on?
They have so much investment in their master plan. And we heard this through the comp plan, that it didn't feel to the community that the county was working with them, that they were just doing their own thing. And that's almost verbatim.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, when we have an opportunity to look at the zoning ordinance, should we change the master plan that has so much investment from the county and people who may have bought property there? It's a serious issue.
And the county, real quick, Rick, is looking at it from the developer's perspective, which is, you know, very key. So it's kind of like, if we were to go, putting it into real terms, if the zoning code were to reduce the density there, they're looking at X amount of fewer units,
right,
or lots, which means X amount of reduced dollars in their pocket. And that's just the reality.
If we make the lots bigger.
Correct.
In the future.
Yeah.
What are those lots? Are those 4,700 square footers? Or?
There's a whole range.
Okay.
Yeah. And we've made the county do some changes already. We've got them to accept additional open space and additional transition area up to the north. So it's not like we're just taking the whole parcel as they prepared it. We have made some changes, and the county has agreed to that through the comprehensive plan process.
And that was a trade-off during that by increasing that open space in that area where it's needed, is along Burgess Road in the crosshatched area, they had essentially only single-family residential identified there. And we said, okay, well, now you can do some multifamily there, which makes sense along Burgess Road.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
So
that was an area for multi.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so, you know, close to arterials, schools, shopping, et cetera. And so that was kind of the trade-off. And they said, hey, there was a way that we tweaked their master plan, mm-hmm, through the county comprehensive plan.
Okay.
See if this works. Why don't James and I look at the county language one more time to see if there's anything that really stands out that would be objectionable based on the comments we heard in the comp plan. How about we do that, and then we come back to you with a report of, yes, you could do these changes, or, you know, here's a reason why to leave the rest alone. How about if we do that, and that would be fair to everyone, and we can, mm-hmm, bring everybody up to speed. Okay? Okay, so we've got the full name of the zone, the short acronym, and then some basic language of where the zones are and their boundaries. And then we jump right into, on page 21, permitted uses. And we've grouped these into the residential zones. So you've got single family, multifamily, and we talk about the principal uses and the conditional uses and accessory uses. Now, obviously, the principal uses for housing. There are a few things that we put in because it's still a transition community. You still allowed some ag, and you're still allowed to do the things that are typical in residential zones. And then, under conditional uses, these are things that require more scrutiny because they don't always blend well with residential uses. So we have large land area commercial recreation, specialized animal raising, care, and processing. In some cases, you need tighter regulations on animal uses. And then campgrounds. And then accessory uses are the things that we heard a lot about in the comp plan. People want to make sure they can do their storage sheds and garages. Swimming pools, home occupations, farm buildings as part of rural operations, and clearly incidental and subordinate uses. And typically, the way to think about that is when a property has a required size, let's say at 6,000 square feet for a single-family home, then you have your setbacks. How close to the property line can you develop? And that's pretty much where all those accessory uses need to be contained, which is in that envelope where you've come back from your setbacks. So if this was the lot, and you had a front yard setback of 10 feet, and the same on the sides, and a 20-foot setback in the backyard, whatever that square is where we're going to regulate uses. The problems come when people start creeping out with RV storage and some other things in these side yards, and then we get drainage going onto somebody else's property. So we need to be real careful about making sure we regulate inside this buildable area. And that's what this code seeks to do, is set out those standards.
I have a question.
Uh-huh.
Veterinary clinics, kennels, and stables.
What page are you on?
On, we're still doing RSF.
Okay.
Single-family residential zone.
Mm-hmm.
And then over here it says specialized animal raising care and processing. I'm just concerned when I hear kennels and stables at certain, I mean, just depending on the kennel and stable, I guess.
Right.
And we have, why wouldn't that be possibly under conditional uses instead of just a blanket principal use?
We could do that.
I would recommend it.
Okay.
Yeah, kennels, and stables. Seem to be as, boy, if someone puts 10 horses next door to you, you bring the flies and the manure, and
right.
if you at least, it should be an outright use.
Mm-hmm.
You're inside of city limits in a single family residential neighborhood, right?
Mm-hmm. That's what I was just wondering. I understand the veterinary clinic part. My question was, and usually they do have kennels limited, but if
Yeah, we've had so many comments and complaints lately that even though you could design it so it has low impact, I think the community is asking us to be a little more strict with that right now. So I think your comment's worthy.
When it talks about kennels and stables, but now, does this mean we get into this one horse or two horse? Are we saying anybody that wants a horse on their property has to, that's too strict, isn't it?
I'm thinking more for commercial use, right?
When you say stables, that sounds like I'm running
a business.
Yeah,
see that, right.
But if I just have two horses, I can only have two horses on an acre. Are we going to say, or what?
That's different. Stables versus how many permitted livestock you can have as part of things.
Yeah, versus like your individual ownership of horses that you own versus you're stabling those for people bringing horses to you.
I can't imagine this community wants stables in their residential neighborhoods without at least asking the question.
Yeah, based on the comments I've heard, the answer is pretty much zero.
Well, you get out to, I'm thinking, only areas like Kegel, stuff like that.
If they have enough room, if they have enough space, if they're willing to, you know, not be right.
I mean, that is the attraction for a lot of
people. But that's why I'm saying here is if they have horses.
Yeah. Well, that's why I was questioning. So if the answer is that you can have two horses in Kegel subdivision, this is saying, can I open up stables to take in 20 other people's horses? Do you want that next door to you on an acre or ground?
Mm-hmm. I'm just saying for commercial use.
And she's not saying it can't be done. It just is a conditional use.
Yeah, right. It makes more sense to put it in the conditional use column.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are you good with accessory uses? Those sometimes crop up as problems.
You have to get a permit for anything that's a conditional use, right?
Yes.
Correct.
Yeah. And accessory uses?
Sometimes you do. What we heard in the comp plan process is make it simple. So if somebody wants a garage and they meet their setbacks, we keep it a clean process. Maybe they file an application, but
I'm
it's not a laborious.
Home-based business part.
That, I think, needs some review. Because if we can't determine if it creates noise or objectionable smells.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do? Can I easily help the community by saying no permits at all, or does that create problems? You have to have some level of regulation there.
Well, and are those grandfathered in? I mean, we have people that are mechanics that have right. do all their business out of the yard.
And that's separate. We're talking about new uses. Some of those existing uses may qualify underneath the new code, or they may be classified as non-conforming uses.
Okay. And they can continue until such time as maybe they stop for typically like a period of a year or more, and then you'd say, well, now the property has to convert back to the intended
use.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just so I know of specialized animal raising care and processing. What do you mean by processing animals?
Well, some people raise rabbits for meat. Specialized meat production, it doesn't take a lot of area. Wild game, wild birds, chickens. Wait, I turned that off. I know, it's terrible. I've turned it off and it keeps coming back on.
Mine went off.
Part of
my daughter's
more service.
Can I jump in here real quick too?
Sit on it.
That's when you look real blank and look around.
See, under the principal uses too, there's different types of permits. Some things would go straight to a building permit, such as like a single family home. But all those other things that are listed under principal uses, like a church or bed and breakfast or if you have, you know, school, those are the types of things that would require a site plan review, okay? And again, site plan review is pretty much you have defined standards, meet these standards, and you're allowed to go in there because we've already said you're a use that we want in this zone. Mm-hmm. The conditional use then is on top of the site plan review, you're looking at a lot more of those compatibility issues. Even though you might meet the setbacks and you have the number of parking spaces, you know, there's ancillary impacts such as smells, you know, insects, noise, dust, things like that that you might want to look at a little more in depth. So those conditional uses typically take two levels of permitting. And the accessory uses, though, again, the way that those are always administered is that if a garage, a storage shed is allowed on your property, it's accessory to a primary use, meaning the primary use has to be there before you can build the accessory use. Mm-hmm. And it was a problem that the county had out in some of the outlying subdivisions as people were coming in getting a permit for a garage and they were living in there. They're saying, but they were doing it under the basis, I'm just getting a building permit, it's an accessory use, bam, and but it was accessory to what? So you kind of think you have to have the primary use to have the accessory. Okay. So that's just kind of taking it through.
And I'll make sure the definition supports that.
And that's the same as you go through all the zones, those kind of permitting processes. Sorry.
No, that's okay. That's fine. Now, some of the accessory uses, like on-site farm produce sales, to me that needs a little mini review. You know, you can't be in the right of way. You need a sign permit, perhaps. But if it's somebody who has three chickens and wants to sell a dozen eggs a week and they've got a little teeny sign, to me that doesn't matter because the way we're going in the sign code is that every property is going to be allowed a minimum level of signage. And in a residential zone, a small, you know, fresh egg sign, who cares? I don't think that's a big deal. Okay. But if you guys do, that's we can always come back, but I want to make sure you get a flavor of this. In the master plan zone, you want to realize that all the principal uses, we want to have all the single family and multi-family principal uses allowed. So instead of listing them all again, we're going to say everything in the RSF and RMF is going to be allowed as a principal use. But the master plan zone has a little greater intensity. So retail sales, not heavy on automobile-driven type uses, but eating and drinking establishments like a cafe, personal health services like a salon or a spa, business, professional, and government offices. They're typically a smaller single proprietor. Commercial recreation. Public swimming pool or athletic club. Those are things that you would typically see in a master plan zone in the RMP area. And daycare centers and nursing homes, those need to be included as much as possible because We don't want to regulate them to any specific zone. They need to be part of the fabric of the neighborhood. Then for conditional uses, same theme. Everything that was a conditional use in the single family and multifamily is going to be allowed. In addition to higher intensity uses like automobile and truck sales and light manufacturing. So those are going to require greater scrutiny through the conditional use permit process. Accessory uses, same theme. And that theme carries over. In the traditional commercial zone, you have the allowed uses that you'd expect in a commercial zone. And we've also allowed the opportunity for single-family dwellings, like live-work above, multifamily dwellings, which could be in an apartment complex or a center, and then all the things that you typically find in a commercial zone.
So in this case, when it says up here, excluding automobile, truck sales and service, the retail sales and or product service establishment would include automobile and truck sales and service in a traditional commercial zone.
Yes.
Because that's what I kept looking for. Because I kept saying, no, automobile and truck sales.
It would be retail sales and product service. We can certainly clarify that to be including automobile so it's clear.
I'm just looking also at the mixed-use commercial zone, the fact that there are repair facilities currently in those zones, but we're saying excluded.
We're saying excluded in the master plan zone unless you get a...
I'm looking at the mixed-use commercial zone. It doesn't say that. All clearly incidental and subordinate uses it. Because it says it here in the residential master plan, but in the mixed-use commercial, it doesn't say it.
That excludes automobile and truck sales.
It says exclude automobiles and truck sales, but it doesn't say over here conditional uses. Like, I'm saying we need to add that as a conditional use the mixed-use commercial zone also.
Gotcha.
Because it doesn't make sense that we'd allow it in a residential, but we won't allow it in a mixed-use zone, which is going to allow for more commercial.
Good point.
So that would be a conditional use.
Yes, that makes sense to me.
And so when you say truck sales, you also mean RVs?
Yes. You can add RVs in there.
Recreation vehicles?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big thing in our area.
It makes sense. And they're bulky and they need a slightly little more review. We do get complaints in other communities about how they're located, so that's a good point.
No, I'm just wondering because I don't want to sit there and say you can't do that and they're already doing it. Well, I mean, I guess you can, like you said, but I'm just saying it makes sense to, in a mixed-use commercial area, to at least allow that as a conditional use.
Nope, you're right.
Okay.
In the neighborhood commercial zone, it's a softer approach. These are the small corner stores, the things that serve neighborhoods specifically. So we're excluding, this is when we're, automobiles are excluded there, but you have a lot of the things that are similar to the residential master plan zone. But since we have a separate CN zone on the map, we want to make sure that we talk about what uses are allowed there.
Which ones are the CN zone?
Color.
They're on the little corners. Hang on.
Okay.
It's the fuchsia. This
the
area.
Light color. Okay.
Yeah. And I think this may not be the most updated map.
It's not the most updated.
No. Oh, yeah,
this
that
area.
Area.
So remember we had that discussion about the existing commercial buildings there? So we need to get you an updated map because the one with the mayor's signature is what should be up here.
That might be hanging up in our map room.
Yeah.
Oh, is that? Okay.
Yeah, we can just bring that in as well.
Okay.
I would think of, you know, when we get into this discussion, whether places like work is that when writing a zoning code or in determining the uses, there's a big choice for all of you, and I know this is what you're getting at, is that just because a land use is there, is that the best place for it? Should it be continued long term? Meaning, do you recognize it as a grandfathered non-conforming use and put provisions in there that they can continue, or do you actually create a zone to prolong that use at that location just because it's there? You know, it's a tough decision because you may end up saying, because what you're really doing is, well, it affects value of someone's property, but you're thinking of it, how does that fit into the community? If you had an existing business going on in the middle of a neighborhood, should you zone that property commercially in the middle of that neighborhood? Because it's there.
No, but I was saying mixed-use commercial, it's already...
You're right. I wasn't, no argument. Okay. I was just saying that, like, that's just something in the back of your head, is it's easy to fall to the temptation to create an actual commercial zone on that property because that use is there. But you think about it, is it really the right thing 20 years down the road to have that commercial zone? So, just kind of a... back your mind. Mm-hmm.
And we'll see that from the public, some uses that maybe we're not familiar with or really haven't stood out. Just like James said, do you spot zone it? Because it's appropriate to do so, and that business has value to the community and it shouldn't change for a long time. Mm-hmm. Or is it something that really doesn't fit with the neighborhood anyway, and over time it should be phased out? So those are good things to talk about.
Because you will get those comments from people.
Yeah. Well, the main thing, people that have been working and, you know, they're set up and they've been doing things for a long time, I don't want to see, you know, all of a sudden they can't do that anymore. You know, that's the biggest thing. If you're moving into an area and, you know that it's not zoned for that, that's a different thing. But,
mm-hmm. And the example would be if you had a home-based bookkeeping business and you said, hey, I've had a business there and I've had it for 20 years, you should zone me commercial. If you zone them neighborhood commercial and they moved out the next day, mm-hmm. any one of these uses that's listed there could theoretically be located there. And you look at, oh, we didn't really mean that you should have a convenience store in the middle of the neighborhood.
But by the same token, what you're saying is you could put a small sign saying, you know, bookkeeping, and you could even have it on a kiosk or whatever if you wanted to.
Sure. Okay. The home occupation things aren't going to be troubling unless they have some external appearance or discharge or, you know, smell or noise that really causes a problem. Sometimes parking's the problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's...
We had 12 cars crammed around one house. That doesn't fit anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a fine line there. Parking's usually the one that causes the...
Isn't it traffic? It would be traffic.
Yeah.
Parking. And then most of the home occupation ordinances I've seen, maybe this is going to be more easy on people. You know, you can't... I mean, it's how much stuff can be outside.
Yeah,
you want no external appearance.
Home occupation can be the bookkeeper, the hairdresser that opens a little shop, the dog groomer, you know, those things.
Yeah.
But, I can tell you, a big one is auto repair type folks. And you start letting them into your residential zones, and like you say, they're there, but when they leave, you really want them out. Because
mm-hmm.
people don't want repair shops.
Mm-hmm.
And then the industrial parks that's back here, vacant,
mm-hmm.
where you should have repair shops.
Mm-hmm.
Or those people are paying higher fees and meeting the requirements, then the other guy charges $20 less an hour labor rate because he's thrown in the middle of a residential neighborhood with no rules and regulations. So you let those continue, I suppose, if they're there, but boy, when they sell, you want to...
Yeah, and it's funny how time makes all those things pretty much go away.
That's right.
On the west side of Bend, we had commercial car repair smack dab in the middle of a Northwest Crossing type neighborhood. And over time, he went away because the value of his property was better, and so he sold, you know, made some money on his property and moved to an industrial area. And that will happen over time because the value of the land usually forces the issue.
And I said all that just to kind of keep in the back of your mind, because we'll hear that during the public testimony.
Oh, yeah.
You're anti-business, you don't want to make a living. Well, you know, there's 100 other people in the neighborhood that want you to make a living, but they want to have some peace and quiet in their neighborhood,
right, too.
So.
And don't forget, this code doesn't automatically make somebody go away. It'll classify them as an okay use or a non-conforming use that can stay the way it is. It can't expand or maybe a non-conforming use that has to go away in a certain period of time, kind of like what we're talking about with signs. So for now, nobody should be frightened that this code is going to make them stop doing their business if that's what they've been doing on their property. There may be rules that come into effect to help guide it over time, but I don't want anybody to think that this code's going to slap, you know, a you can't do business label on their property, because that's not the case. Okay, now in the transitional areas, I left that open, and the more I think about it, for the TA areas, and these are the crosshatched areas we show on the map, where we know that we have to transition from industrial to residential or commercial to residential back and forth. My thought was originally to just have that have the same standards as the master planning process. And it seems to fit for 99% of what we need to do. So when you look at the MP requirements, it's residential or single family and multifamily. It's got all the things that you'd expect in a small master plan. And so instead of being repetitive, I'm thinking that for the RMP area, we do slash TA, because I don't think we would be doing much different. So for the transitional areas, we would have the principal uses the same as the RMP, same conditional uses, and same accessory uses. Just something to think about. Because I'm not seeing dramatic differences. Mm-hmm. And you want those areas to be master planned. If you do piecemeal development there, you're really not guaranteeing that those transitional areas will be indeed transitional. Mm-hmm. In the industrial zone, typical industrial listings kept it very open. I left sawmills in. I put in power or energy generation for the obvious reasons, because we've just worked on that. Government buildings, storage units. But the big one is, you know, these are for establishments that manufacture something or process something, research and development, wholesale.
Okay. Conditional uses.
Mm-hmm.
Mineral excavations. Are we talking about actual mineral excavation on the property, or are we talking about them bringing something into process?
No, on the property.
Actually mining on the property.
If somebody wanted to do that, we want to regulate that heavily. Now, we have some areas in town.
Well, yeah, I agree, but I'm just
Well, think of the big forest areas that are preserved for industrial use.
Mm-hmm.
If that is...
ever expanded to?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
There may be minerals there. There may be excavation for soil or clay or whatever. We don't want that to happen without some regulation.
Now, does that include, like, the Russell, like the buttes, the, you know, what they do? They take the
gravel and
that sex of excavation?
Yeah. Okay. And there are good reasons for that. One,
not a lot of
dust is created. Storage is a difficult thing. Trips. There's a lot of debris that occurs. So it's not that we don't want it if it's appropriate, it's just that a conditional use permit requires you give it some scrutiny.
Mm-hmm. I also noticed that you didn't break this out. You have an industrial, but we have a light industrial and a heavy industrial zone. Do you need to break that out for that? Or?
That's a good question. I left it one. The way things are moving in the community, they're kind of blending together. Now, if you feel you need a light industrial area, you'll often find in other communities those just go commercial or office anyway. I left industrial for industrial purposes.
What kind of heavy industry would you...
Well, it came up with the spiral green because some of these people moved in that Midsway area. Mm-hmm. That actually is light industrial. That's zoned for light industrial right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was an issue. And I'm just wondering if we need to separate that out.
So they wouldn't have a tall tower, for example.
I think it's only 40 acres or something like that, this light industrial.
The zone is
It depends on what the uses are that you list in it. So typically a heavy industrial zone allows everything that's in a light industrial zone plus some additional heavier things. More intense development. Look at the map now. That's the
industrial district, and then there's the business park.
I didn't even know there was a difference until they brought it up.
Well, the business park is falling under industrial zone, right?
But they broke out of light. Yeah.
But I thought it was light industrial.
I'm not showing on your zoning map that you have...
Just one industrial.
A light industrial. You've got the business park, which maybe that's what they're talking about.
They are. And there's supposedly a sign there that there's 40 acres that are near that residential area that are all light industrial versus... heavy industrial or big industrial.
And that's the thing. See, like on the comp plan map, remember, those are general and we can be specific. So that shows all of that just as plain industrial.
That big grand stopper.
It's all industrial, but with under the industrial, because that's, you know, the 20-year saying it's going to be industrial of some type. We can create a light industrial and a heavy industrial or general industrial zone under that designation. Just two different types of industrial.
They may be marketing it as light industrial.
Yeah, they are. Now
it says business park.
Okay.
So
your list is pretty restrictive for a business park.
You mean in the I zone?
Yeah. I mean, because, like I say, they call it a business park, but you're zoning it industrial, and if you can do just these things there, there's already businesses that don't qualify.
So adding in a business park may be better because we have some investment there already.
No, I mean, because what you end up in those kind of business parks, the same thing if you go into the Brunson Business Park, which is owned industrial, but you get the tile shop. He has a retail part in the back. They store the tile. It's got a retail mix, you know. But you can go down the list of all of the cabinet shop. They've got a retail component in the back.
Sure, yeah.
They might store some. This is almost saying you got to make the cabinet there only, and there's no retail mix, there's no component. And we have an auto repair shop is one of the only three businesses back there, and it's in a new building. So I think this, you have to be careful because you don't even allow auto repair.
So let's...
Or a hair salon.
There is a hair salon.
So a flex zone would be good.
That recognizes what's there today. And call it a flex zone so that you can have the...
Well, Lee, those are half acre and acre lots. Heavy industry is not going on a half acre lot. They can't make anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of them are 0.25.
This is your Brunson Business Park back there. I mean, it's curb sidewalk. I mean, not sidewalk, but it's paved and they're small lots.
Like a business park.
And also because of the fact that there is residential right there next to it. You know,
okay, see
across the street from
this
it.
This way, yeah.
See where the gray part is on the zoning map?
Yeah.
To me, that feels industrial. When you go out there, it's just really has that kind of feel based on its configuration. Mm-hmm. But the purple stuff going west is different.
Mm-hmm. Is this the business park, the purple?
Yeah.
Where's your office?
We're right here.
Yeah, okay, the water district with their tank.
Right.
This is more of your light industrial or business park. This is heavier.
Okay.
So we need to allow more of this mixed retail.
Okay.
Retail, commercial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, make it like a commercial.
That's where you put your carpet store. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah,
and then commercial.
Your cabinet shop.
So now we have this industrial boxed in by flexible business park, residential, and some commercial. It seems to me that in terms of zoning, it may be a benefit to make this more flexible instead of having the industrial standards here be boxed in here.
Right.
Now that shouldn't hurt property owners because it gives them additional uses that they didn't have before. Mm-hmm. So bringing this over makes more sense. How does that sound?
I just think, you know, some of the businesses there, though, are
that are
pretty,
in there right now?
Yeah, like the one that
built
the log cabins and, the, you know,
that would still be allowed
or whatever.
Yeah, I think
but they might want to have a showroom, too.
Little miniature houses.
And that's going to be in regard to what Rick was saying, is that you can manufacture there, but can you have a showroom and can you sell there?
Yeah. I thought they did.
Those are included. Well, those would be included.
At showrooms.
Just a year ago, I was a witness in a case on this very thing, and it's included under those incidental and subordinate uses. And what it is are you allowed to have a retail component with your industrial use? And Deborah started to get at the issue of sometimes a lot of times in your light industrial areas, there's pressure, because they're cheaper than commercial areas, typically to buy or lease space, that businesses that are retail or on the cusp want to move into those areas because it's cheaper. And so you really get into a gray area here of, you know, when do you cross the line from being like manufacturing with the showroom being accessory to where you're just primarily retail important products from other people and selling them there and maybe not manufacturing there. A lot of times businesses evolve like that over time, but it's how do you regulate that? The way this is written, it might not be clear. You still might need a couple different industrial business park type zones. But those, where it says all clearly incidental and subordinate uses, manufacturing, a cabinet shop, the retail or showroom component of that would be subordinate to the primary.
Just that incidental.
It's not clear though.
It's not always incidental. I own a light industrial building and then I manage several. And this issue comes up all the time. Oh, now you've got government excluded. But ODF&W, they got pickups and they got their things. They rent a light industrial building.
Mm-hmm.
They don't manufacture anything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I have a t-shirt shop that makes t-shirts. Now, they make them in the back, but half of their stuff is not back making it. It's, you just, and I've had a plumbing store. You know, he stores plumbing parts, but, you know, that's where the people come to get the plumber. So, you just be careful with it. If you start to limit yourself, you really don't want those out on Main Street. You do want some of them back there.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, now we're playing devil's advocate. Right. You're exactly right. But on the back end, then, when do you take some of your industrial land, which you have a finite supply of, and people push the limit and it ends up becoming primarily retail because it's cheaper than to rent out on Main Street?
But what's the business park? It's half retail. I mean, it's not a mall, but when you go down there, you can play kickball, soccer, inside the indoor arenas, right?
Yep.
That new big thing. And that's an industrial park.
Yeah.
That's what that was built for. So I know that's the problem.
Well, typically less than half. If your retail is less than half, you're going to catch most of that. The question of how people sell their industrial land for a variety of uses, that's a questionable thing.
I want to talk to Liggy because, you know, this is a county Liggy mm-hmm. project where they've got a ton of money back there,
yep.
and this is a down economy, and I don't want Liggy to find people, and then all of a sudden the city with our first-time mm-hmm. new ordinance mm-hmm. says, oh, you right. can't go in. They've invested a ton of money in that industrial, light industrial park.
They're on the track, aren't they?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah,
then you get a million emails. Right. They need to know what we're talking about
here. I'll call me specifically.
Yeah, there could be two different.
Yeah, they may have some really good ideas on it too, you know.
But you see the challenge.
Oh, no.
Yeah. You know, you start letting little half-acre lots go in and all of a sudden you have nothing left.
Well, actually what normally happens is the big box stores in the bigger cities are going to happen here. The box stores go in and that's why the Walmart, they move in because it's cheaper land and they can find a big enough footprint. Then the city's out of industrial land.
Yep.
You've seen this played out a million times. That's why Ben doesn't have any industrial land, because basically mm-hmm. you convert it. Yeah.
And we've preserved on the right-hand side in the light green big chunks for future industrial.
See, I think, don't you think that the line between what was industry and what is not, it used to be when you had big sawmills throwing sawdust in the air, that was industry. Mm-hmm. Now the problem is you may be sitting at computers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, and so where does a company go if all 10 of us are going to sit at computers all day? Do we sit out in the commercial zone next to Macy's?
No.
Or do we go to the industrial park?
Mm-hmm.
And so you get into this, do I have to produce something? Well, I'm producing stuff on my computer.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has changed.
The high-tech stuff like iSky, which took up the old Tektronix building.
Yes.
That's a good example.
That's a call center, or do call centers go in industrial parks?
I think it's a good place for them.
They need large, office or large space needs, things like that. That's typically what.
So, like here, if we don't change it, you put a call center under these definitions.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll flex that up. We'll add in a flex zone or a business park zone so that you have those opportunities. We'll talk with Lee.
Yeah, we definitely want to try to make this business friendly,
Yeah. And I think you will. I mean, you've got to start somewhere, and adding is better than deleting.
What's the purpose of the last line there? After the forest and resource transition area.
Forestry activities.
Forestry activities, including the olive and timber harvesting, is better use in all zones.
For example, if you wanted to clear your property, if you wanted to cut your trees down.
Is that considered a forestry activity? Not yet.
If you're selling the timber, it's regulated.
Well, it goes. Reason fine. Bringing it up is because in Eugene all trees are sacred, and thou shalt not so cut down a tree.
Yeah. We're not there yet.
And
so right now,
I don't know what that means actually.
What we're saying is that you can manage the timber on your property, mm-hmm. and we have property owners that have big swaths of land.
Sure.
And if they wanted to clear it, we're saying that's not going to be stopped, that mm-hmm. would be permitted.
And if they're selling it, it's managed under, there's other Oregon forestry requirements they have to meet for timber, harvest timber management. But during the comp plan process, I mean, we heard, and that's where we've created some green spaces, but we also heard that the right to do those types of things on your property as a historic type of use and what people have done in the pine, and that they wanted to continue that.
Well,
so,
I agree.
So,
well, instead of like in Redmond where there's a permit required to cut a tree, I don't want to have to do that.
And we're in a little different environment, too. And when your site plans come through, you're going to have landscaping requirements, and you're going to start building a kind of an urban forest, a different forest than what you have now. In the F-zone, we essentially recognize that this is really our industrial, future industrial areas. It's a holding zone, so to speak. And the conditional uses are the same as in the industrial zone. We added in storage and sale of junk because we don't want things piling up, and then is conditional uses sanitary landfill, solid waste transfer. We can add in more things, but really that F zone is the holding area for future industrial, and that it's on the east side, big swath of land, and it'll be curving around the green area, which we're calling the Lapine Wayside. So we need to control that a little bit more. Has anybody heard an update on whether the BLM transfer has occurred?
Oh, no.
Sorry. Dami, can you update us?
Nope. Love to.
What happened? What's going on?
It's just laying in Washington, sitting waiting.
Okay. So Wyden's office is on it, but it just hasn't occurred.
Okay.
All right. Because that's important for us to know in terms of, what we're doing out there.
I mean, it could be several years. It's already been several.
Yeah.
They don't like to rush things.
Maybe they're going to stay.
Yeah, this is kind of like a no-brainer. Why they couldn't do that. And then here we have a chart on page 25. Lot, yard, and height requirements. So if somebody wanted to know, we could direct them to one page, and we can put this in kind of our easy-to-read pull-out.
Good idea. Mm-hmm.
So the minimum lot width in the residential zones is 25 feet. And you might say, 25 feet? But when you have attached zero lot line dwellings, like townhomes, that's pretty much where you start. So this is the minimum. The maximum building setback is 20 feet. Remember how I said you have that buildable area. Mm-hmm. Side yards, 10. Rear yards, 20. In the residential zones, you can go up to 45 with a maximum lot coverage of 50%.
Why don't you have a minimum building setback? That's what I'm used to seeing is a minimum.
We could.
Do you want to allow curbside buildings right up next to the sidewalk? Because really when you don't say minimum, that's what you're allowing.
That's right. And if you feel more comfortable with minimum, we could do that. That way you have greater flexibility. What this would do is if we left it the way it is now, you wouldn't have buildings that could be on the furthest point of their property. Mm-hmm. So if we want greater flexibility, and in Kegel this is some of the case, you have long driveways and the buildings in the back. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't permit this. So if we go minimum 20, then the style of development that you see mostly in the pine would be preserved.
You're getting front yard.
Yes.
Okay. Well, 20 may not be the right answer either, because I've run across in the past people complaining about requiring a 20-foot setback. And, but, you know, maybe it's a 10-20 or something like that, or a 5-20.
So this is for the front yards.
Right.
Yeah.
Minimum 5, maximum 20, something like that. I don't know. It's just.
Well, I don't think you should be any closer than 20 feet to a road. When you get any closer than that, you may have problems.
Well, there actually are communities where you're allowed to build right up next to the sidewalk.
You can do that. When I see that,
is
I see.
Is this the current?
No.
I see a modified where if you have the house, or let's say it's a house, it can be built right up to the property line, but the garage, if you have a garage facing the street, the garage door needs to be set back 20 feet so that you have room to park the car without it sticking out.
Yeah.
So I see it modified like that.
Well, the other place I've seen it is where you see a lot of Spanish-style building where they have a central courtyard.
Yeah.
The house is right up front of the street, but the yard is really in the middle of the house between the little
U-shaped.
We want that.
You had to have
at
least.
To me, you're only going to have a front zero lot line type thing if it's some sort of planned development of some type that, you know, town home that they're doing. I don't think the average person wants to be in a subdivision that, you know, there's houses normal and then all of a sudden there's one sticking right out.
Well, that's why I'm used to seeing in the Northwest a minimum building setback, 10 feet, 15 feet, 20 feet. There's some you got to have your houses back at least that far, and like you said, a lot of time it's to allow for parking in front of the garage or open space, that type of thing.
Yeah, you know, a lot of this when you look at some of the when you see maximums, a lot of times it's designed to bring, for example, homes up to the sidewalk area to create that life on the street and on the sidewalk, because as you have that, it tends to, it has other things. It brings people out to walk. It slows down traffic on the street. Mm-hmm. There's other things like that when you force that development up like that. You know, as people get further off the road, there's, you know, traffic speeds. People don't go out on their front porch. They don't walk to the sidewalk. So there's a lot of those other things like that. But you could write it either way. It doesn't matter. Just kind of throw the ideas that's behind some of these sometimes.
The houses that are out there, that one tract out there, I'm trying to think, those yards are very small. Those houses are pretty close to the...
In the county?
Oh, yeah. Not Finley View, but the next street.
Or Wheeler Ranch. Wheeler Ranch, is that what it is? Yeah, those yards are really small in front.
10 feet or something.
You think they're about 10 feet?
In front of the sidewalk.
Yeah. I'm visual. I'm trying to figure out, you know, what we're talking about here.
And you know, in the comp plan process, we talked about what's unique in the pine. One, you need more surface area for drainage. You have a certain vegetation that people wanted to preserve, so they didn't want the house to be dominant. And we have a need for future right-of-way widenings, probably in the future.
Yeah, see, that's the other.
So we didn't want to use up everything by cramming things too close.
You have more snow to stack.
More snow to stack.
You do are going to have to get your right-of-ways, right? And even these guys sitting at the sewer. Our sewer system that we have here is not a Bend, Redmond, Matters, Pranville sewer system. You still have a tank.
Right.
Because the solids stay on your property.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got to have a tank with a thing and a pump truck can come pump it. Mm-hmm. So it's not the same.
Right. Okay. And I agree. I'm like thinking of this, and I don't like the maximum building setback. I would prefer to say minimum building setback.
And the minimum in the county code today is 20 feet.
Mm-hmm. And that's for car parking.
The front yard is 20 feet or 10 feet if a garage or carport is located a minimum of 20 feet from the front property line.
Mm-hmm. But that's what I'm saying, because then it gives people, they buy a lot, they know how big the lot is, and they know what they can do with it. But you want to be able to say, we don't want it any closer than this to the road. So then you give them a minimum setback. And you have a minimum setback from the back and from each side.
So was this one that said you couldn't set it back as far as you want?
No, this says you could set it back as far as you want, as long as you think you're within 20 feet from the rear yard,
and
you're back at least 10 feet from the front.
This one says you can only set it back 20
feet. That's what I'm saying. That's why I think it ought to be minimum.
I like that. I would rather have the minimum, and that way you can use your lot based on...
If you have a long, skinny lot, you can stick it back there if you want.
Right.
Yeah.
So we'll change that to minimum, and that will help you there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Draw me down on here.
Do you know how to turn that off?
I don't. I just
don't. I can call my kid.
Yeah.
And I keep pressing it and it goes off.
My kid was in Washington, D.C. I still call him and ask him how to turn that stuff off.
I've had trouble with new phones.
Come on, phone.
No, never.
I'm pretty sure it's off.
Okay.
It's on the bar. Yep, it's off.
No.
If you hold it for like 5 seconds, it should come back on.
Well, because the whole thing is, in Lapine, people want to be able to use their property the way that they want to use their property.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So we'll change that to minimum, and that helps that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. On that page, down at the bottom, number one, no dwelling structure shall have visible or enclosable. What about carports?
That's a question. Do you want to allow existing carports, or do you want to enclose garages?
Existing?
Mm-hmm.
Or new?
No, excuse me. No dwelling structure shall have visible, unenclosable openings which allow penetration of air outside elements or animals into the structure's interior.
Well, one of the things, we have a lot of people that have RVs, and they just have a cover over them.
Yeah.
But isn't it a dwelling structure?
It's for dwellings.
So it would have to be something you lived in.
Yeah.
Okay, so that would fall under the accessory part of that.
Okay.
You want garages.
Oh, God, yes. But you can't park an RV in a garage.
No.
But
the houses, most places require a garage.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because otherwise the stuff will just stack up outside. No one can get a car in a garage.
Yeah.
But,
you don't need to have
to
hide
the
stuff.
The garage becomes your storage.
I would bet that between 25% and 50% of the houses in town don't have a garage.
Just out of curiosity.
Yeah.
Would that include like a sleeping porch?
Yes,
someone wanted to build a sleeping porch and enclose it with like mesh or whatever like they do back east.
But that would be closable.
It would allow air.
Air pressure, so air.
I'm just asking.
Do you want to accept enclosed porches or screened porches?
I don't know. I don't know that I have that strong opinion one way. I'm just asking.
Yeah. Well, she's trying to think of other things that could be covered.
Those are pretty common around here.
Yeah.
So accepting those out would be sensible.
Okay.
Because we do have a lot of those.
Okay.
Everybody okay with homes have to be on foundations?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that 15 PSI is a FHA requirement, I think, now. And it says 99.99999% of all homes are being financed through the FHA. everything's got to be tied down.
Yeah, and I'll double check that with the IBC to make sure we don't have any conflicts there, because the IBC will control.
Mm-hmm.
We just went through that. We just paid for an inspection.
So here's a question for you. You have a house that's not on foundation. It can still be sold and everything.
Well, we're not going to control the sale of that, but for new structures, we're going to say they have to be on foundations and tied down.
Okay.
Which maybe you've already covered over, it's coming later, but you brought up the motorhomes, because after being county commissioner and having, well, I'm talking motorhomes. Curtis River Ranch. Because I see all those when I drive down Cagle Subdivision and all over.
Mm-hmm.
In our new subdivision ordinances, can you buy a lot and pull your motorhome in and skirt it and live in it?
No.
Well, that would be governed under the zoning code, not the subdivision code.
Okay, well, I'm just asking because I don't know where it's going, or because she brought it up, and I just think because that is, in fact, how people use their property.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that transition from Curtis River Ranch bought this. And what is our thought on that?
There are several lots that I've seen around town that people have for summer homes, whether it's just set up for a motorhome or a fifth wheel or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They come in and spend the summer there, and then they leave and go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Is that controlled by CC&Rs, perhaps?
Okay, no. Probably doesn't have any CC&Rs.
There's no CC&R out there.
So it's a habitual use that you're seeing now. The question for the Planning Commission is, as the city grows, is that something that you want to encourage and permit? Normally, you don't want to do that.
Well, I could see two instances that might be spelled out, like vacation,
mm-hmm.
or when people are building, they stay in their
home. Well, temporary. Yeah.
Because, for example, out in Hunter's Pines, you can stay in it while you're building.
Mm-hmm.
That shouldn't be a problem.
And then you're supposed to not have anyone living in it, and you have the neighbors going around and monitoring who's not following the rules.
Okay, let's say there's two lots left in a developed subdivision with stick-built homes.
Mm-hmm.
No CC&Rs, and a person wants to put in their motorhome, skirt it, and live there. Now, typically, that's going to cause more problems. It's better in a community to say that's something we want to get away from, unless you have specific areas where you think that's appropriate.
The only need I see that I think does help the community is the people that have summer homes set up here or summer locations set up here that are full-time RVers.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't see anything wrong with that as long as it's well landscaped and taken care of. But you don't see something that's pulled in there and skirted.
See, right now, they probably don't come in for any permit. So do you want it to where if they're going to be a summer home RVer, to where you control their driveways, you can only be there 6 months, no more than 6 months, are you required to hook if there's a sewer? Because a lot of them now, they'll gray water it into the ground. Do you want to require, if you're going to spend more than 30 days on your property in this fashion,
mm-hmm.
you must hook to sewer and domestic water if it's available? It's that type of stuff. What happens when they build? They all want to build the lean-to
mm-hmm.
next to the
structure.
And so it's. I think that it's so prevalent that maybe you do actually include it somehow because it is a part of your economy. Now maybe there's certain areas. Now you're not going to go into Crescent Creek with it because their CCRs won't.
Okay.
But.
Well, on those 1 acre lots like at Cagle and some of those other spots, those are perfectly acceptable for that as long as they're done in a proper fashion. It's not a bunch of.
I think we need to get them in for print. The other thing is I have not seen this here, but you can tell me. Well, I have seen it here. It's not one RV we pull in.
Right.
Three people buy the lot.
Right.
And they do the semicircle with three RVs.
Mm-hmm.
They put the fire pit in the middle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you want that in your residential neighborhoods? Can they only have one RV if I'm a summer homer, can I hook my sewer and water to three RVs?
Nice enough that it looks like they have their own RV park.
Maybe anything beyond one has to be no more than 14 days. In other words, you call it for a weekend with your friends. Mm-hmm. But should they? I see some back there that look like they're what I would call numerous permanent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is something of a cultural nature. If you feel that it's important because it's part of Lapine, then we need to have some language talking about how it's going to be regulated or not. And what I'm hearing from you is that it should come in for some sort of checkoff list on standards.
Exactly.
One per lot, you know,
Public utilities, minimum utility requirements, that
okay.
kind of thing.
Okay.
I don't know about the one per lot thing, though.
Well, isn't that the county regulates these right now on all the lots outside the city?
Yeah,
and
sure
they've been doing
do.
It for years. Well, I mean, they have regulations written for it. I'll put it that way.
So can we get a look at them?
Yes, and that's what you're saying.
Because that's what I'm saying. If we look at theirs and we say, okay, this is already it. It was already covering.
That's pretty close. What they do is they rely on the difference in the definition between a dwelling and an RV. Dwellings are permitted outright, mm-hmm. but RVs aren't. Right now, the way this is written, they say you can stay for no more than 120 days at one time, which is typically like your, you know,
months?
Mid-May through mid, kind of, what, September?
Yeah,
well,
several months. They actually be movable?
Mm-hmm. Then it'd be, yeah.
I mean, things like that.
Yeah.
I would like that.
Sort of, you know.
Well, I mean,
they do that to weather, too.
They even do it in the RV parks.
Yeah, uh-huh.
So we'll pull that language for you.
Yeah, I think we definitely need that.
Like maybe a minimum number of square feet per unit.
Right.
So that you don't get too many jacked into one small area.
Right. That's a good, yeah, I'd like to see what they have.
Okay. We'll certainly do that. Okay, so on top of page 26, we're seeing the minimum lot area for residential zones, minimum lot area, minimum, not maximum, is 3,000 square feet for the first unit plus 1,000 square feet for each additional dwelling unit thereafter. That covers your zero lot lines, your townhomes, and lets you go up as large as you want.
45 feet.
Right. Oh, this is just the size of the lot itself. Not height, not height.
Okay. So that's like 100 by 30?
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to, 3,000 square feet.
Yeah, that's your minimum.
Yeah.
And you can never go smaller than that. Now, that's an aggressive urban standard, but you're going to have some of those zero lot line townhomes.
I think so, especially with the way housing has gone in the last few years. There'll be more and more of that.
And it's okay to have those attached units because under site plan approval, we're going to require minimums for open space and how they connect to utilities, etc.
In Switzerland, you find those that have been there for 1,500 years. And they won't allow them to change them. You can remodel them, make them look nice, but they're just all those zero lot line homes that people have been living in for forever. So you might see more of that in this country also.
Well, the Swiss. Multifamily dwellings, 5 or more dwelling units have to comply with special standards. And so that has to do with how you deal with vehicles, what you do with stormwater runoff, and in all cases, this code is not going to allow water on a lot to go onto somebody else's property or the right-of-way. That's very important. So we can't allow development that encourages that or creates a problem for the public in general. That's just basic city planning stuff.
Okay, that was brought up something that I did not see anywhere in here is about snow removal and disposal.
How do you guys handle it now?
Well, it's been a problem in some of the areas.
Just pushed out and it makes the
basically,
snow.
Basically, there are some areas where, like out in front of the fire office, they've got a big dip. You know, there are a few places around, but if you're doing multiple dwellings, you know, I mean, you need to allow for that. That was one of that Wheeler Ranch and some of these other areas, the alleys and stuff are really hard to negotiate.
Sewage is a problem.
So maybe, are you talking about maybe having something that says you must handle, well, part of the site?
Maybe have a plan.
But you have to have a snow removal plan?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Where do you store it? In other words, you need to store it in your property. What people do is they push it out into the street. Then we have to deal with it because they. So I think when you plan a home or a development, because the plan has enough snow, you should have a plan as to where you're going to stack and store snow.
Yeah, that's a big issue.
On the public property.
Yeah,
and
we
it may be
a problem in our office.
Yeah,
the apartment complex right there across the street.
Mm-hmm.
They plowed out across the street onto our sidewalk. Well, we have to maintain our sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's hard to do when there's 15 feet of frozen ice.
Yeah, that's what happens.
You know, shut down.
Okay.
So we need a snow storage for the sponsors.
Snow removal.
Removal on plans. In a plan?
Yes.
Okay. I've never calculated space for snow storage.
Well, it isn't a big problem like it is here. You know, I mean, it really is.
And if we get into another...
It's a good thing to deal with.
About every 30 years, we go into a cold cycle, and it starts stacking up. I mean...
Mm-hmm. And well, emergency services, I'm sure, has a problem.
Another problem is, you know, even the snow plows. I mean, berms that build up in front of driveways and all kinds of stuff. So, you know, that's all has to be dealt with.
Okay. Yeah. Good question.
How do you stop the city from putting the
burn
in front of your
I
house?
Know!
Exactly. But that's universal.
Yeah.
And it's just a fight. You clear it off in the morning and it gets to bed by the time you get up.
Okay, you know, it's interesting because I was talking to Rick about that. Mm-hmm. We, every year, hire the same guy to plow the snow and just tell him when he plows it, we don't want to let him in the driveways. And he plows the street and he makes one pass back through and just shuts it out of the front of everybody's driveway. It's no big deal. You just have to tell the snow plow guys to do it and make sure that they do it.
How do they do that? They clear
well,
on the street and then they've got to come back through and do
it's just your driveway here. And this is the pile of snow here.
Mm-hmm.
They just take this pile of snow that's right there in front of your driveway and they just push it over here.
Mm-hmm. For every driveway?
Yeah. Yeah.
Go, zoop, that's private zoop.
Oh, no. Him and I had this debate today. he would like it to be part of our contract for the snow plow, and he didn't get a lot of traction with
it. No, I did not. With Rick. That's not the city's job.
Gosh! Yeah. My dad was with the county public works director today, and he said, you know, we pay by the hour, and if you're going to start plowing out people's driveways so that you're clearing it, you know, it does increase. So maybe it's 25%, maybe it's 20%, but it's money, and we have a multi-trillion-dollar debt nationally. We have a $2 billion debt state level, and probably, you know, government, people want government to shrink, not grow, and, you know, more people have to start taking responsibility for things. And I realize some people are handicapped and can't do things. You choose to live in Lapine at 4,000 or 5,000 feet, you are in a snow community. I can choose to live in Arizona where there is no snow. I mean, at what point does the government can't provide everything for everyone?
Could you talk to him about my mailbox, though? Missing it?
So
we have done that.
So, you know, now I think where I agree with him is different people, how they plow can make it easier.
Oh, yeah.
Not build, in other words, not kill everyone else's snow and let it fall off in your driveway. You know, when you're going, you did say that some of them do better.
Yeah, some of them do better. Some guys, when they make their pass, they'll keep the plow turned away when they go past the driveway, and then they'll turn it as they're going down the road and kick it where they're in the driveway, so they don't leave as much stuff in front of the driveway.
Sure,
so that's a discussion I'm going to have with them, because we're just getting the goods out on that. And that's a discussion I'm going to have to try to reduce it. But I don't want us to get into make any false expectations that we're going to start plowing out driveways.
The problem gets is if we have a bad year and we get 5 feet of snow, it's going to be a problem no matter what, because there's no place to put it.
Right.
There's no place along the side of the road to put it. There's no.
And when we get 5 feet of snow, complaints will be running off the roof. Mm-hmm. It's like any that kind of cries.
Oh yeah.
And
I
hope I'm not here when that happens.
You've got a nice ice pivot over there. You can store snow.
Yeah. What's that?
That's sewer district.
Oh yeah.
Okay, we're making progress, but not speedy enough. So what's going to happen is we'll probably carry over this, but let's see how far we get. James and I need to kind of take off by 6:45.
Yeah, thereabouts.
Okay. And you get tired of this, so we don't want to go too long.
Item D should be in the residential section also.
Yes, right. I think we are in the residential
section. We're in the multifamily.
Oh, in Resi 2.
Yeah. Okay.
Mobile home parks, they have rules through the state of Oregon and HUD, so we will comply with those. Specialized animal raising, care, and processing. This is where we get into horses. And I've been pretty restrictive here. Minimum lot area is 5 acres. You've got a setback. and no more two if you've got runs for more than two birds or animals, the owner must provide evidence that waste and manure will not create a problem. And in further thinking here, because of this horse issue that's come up, I think we need to limit it to two horses per acre maximum. And that seems to be where we're falling with all the comments that have been coming to me. And some interesting phone calls that I'm getting, which is just fine.
So that would be inconsistent if you say the minimum lot area is 5 acres, but you're allowed two horses per acre.
We'd have a separate section for horses and livestock.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be 10 horses on 5 acres.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking the other way around, where somebody has an acre, they want to put two horses.
Yeah.
There are people all over town with horses.
Yeah.
On their property, and so what do you do with those
two horses and a whole lot less than 1 acre or two?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then if they're miniature horses, do you get to have more?
No. Some people bring those horses in their houses, but we're not going to go that
far. We have no miniature horse racers around here.
So the question is, where the minimum lot area should be 5 acres, it's what is the appropriate acreage, or do we separate it out for different types of uses?
Well, I think that you get a lot of complaints if you don't make it 1 acre. Minimum lot area should be 1 acre.
Okay.
So in other words, you can have an animal, well, I don't know about that, you can have a horse on 1 acre,
mm-hmm.
not on a half, so you got to have 1 acre, then how many horses can you have?
And we're going to add in the two horses.
No more than two horses per acre.
Okay.
So we're changing the 5 to 2, 1?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Is that before or after the home is built on that acre?
It's at any time.
Yeah.
So yeah, the house could include the house, is what he's saying.
That cuts the area.
And if you've got 20 on an acre right now, it'll become a non-conforming use, and over time has to be phased out.
Well, now, let me say over time. This is one that I think, based on the complaints we're getting, that does, you know, there's one thing to grandfather in the repair shop till he's done. I think if someone's got 8 or 10 horses on an acre, they do not need to be getting 10 years to do that. I mean, to me, it needs to be much more.
Yeah.
So, and to it, you're right. I can tell you that I'm used to. Or you can have horses. You have 2 acres to have a couple horses. 1 acre, you know, is not a lot of land by the time you do driveways and things. But mm-hmm. but if you want to have two, that's better than where we are.
Yeah.
What we did is when we set this, and it's the non-conforming use is when that horse goes. That you can't replace it with another horse. Yeah. The non-conforming use is you have that brown horse.
Mm-hmm.
When that brown horse dies, or that chicken is slaughtered, if in fact you've got more chickens than you're supposed to have, you've got to go down to those numbers. You can't replace the dead chicken with a new chicken.
I'd have to add that language in.
But I would think that if you, like, we've got these people with multiple horses, they're going to just keep replacing horses.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what if cows are in law, are cows allowed?
Yeah.
So what if I've got 10 cows on my property?
You
gotta get rid of them.
The question is, the owner provide evidence that waste products and manure will not create a nuisance. Odor nuisance, right?
But see, that's so subjective. The problem is the neighbor says it smells, I don't like it, I got more flies. How do you count flies? I mean,
right.
To me, it's one that hopefully you guys all want. A city subdivision, to me, shouldn't have cattle. But,
right.
I mean, a horse is one thing.
But we have 4-H'ers here.
You can actually, some of them will have an exclusion mm-hmm. for 4-H, because 4-H is only for the season.
Or we want one.
The child must be enrolled in the 4-H program. There's a lot of ways. But you want cows inside your city?
Not over time. As Lapine urbanizes, that would be something you'd hope goes away.
Do we have any now? I don't think we do.
The other thing, too, from a practical point of view, is there is no forage for cows in the city. We don't have the type of ground or plants or that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. In fact, I get upset with the horse people because a lot of them have these horses out in places. Yeah. I wouldn't have a horse.
So can you have pigs? You can have any livestock?
Yeah, pretty much you can.
Well, right over here on 6th Street, right across, I believe it's still in the city limits. We do have quite a herd of cattle over there.
Yeah, but that's on actual farmland. And that actually is seasonal too, isn't it?
Yes,
yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
It is seasonal.
Okay, so here's the concept. We want, over time, livestock to be regulated. We want more, any livestock that's more than our maximum allowed in this code, we want to go away. And we want that to go away when the animal dies or is moved off mm-hmm. the property.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean,
that's the easiest way to do it.
I don't know what I'm going to do with the 9 horses on one lot, but yeah, do you make this for one thing or not? But I've been over there twice. Everyone on all sides is upset.
Yeah.
And if these horses, I don't know how old these horses are. How long does the horse live?
30 years.
Yeah. But I don't believe that in a residential subdivision that neighbors should be putting up with anyone with 9 horses, and I don't think they should put up with it for another month. I mean, that's me.
Mm-hmm. What are they doing with the horses?
They just are there.
Are they rescue horses? I do know there were some people that took in rescue horses because mm-hmm. nobody else.
But the neighbors don't care why. I mean, I've been over there and I back these neighbors. This is a residential subdivision. They can't control the manure, and they just stack it higher. I mean, what do you do? It's not fair, as far as I'm concerned, to the neighbors.
And you have the animal hoarders too, that type of person that just mm-hmm. wants.
Yeah, did these people come in, or were they there before? You don't know.
The neighbor, in this particular case, the neighbor says the horses have come in. That it's like either there are two things. Either these people have bought these horses or people are leasing space from them, and he believes it's the latter.
Mm. And now they have two lots and they have two houses. Now they got the horses moving over into the next property. Mm. So
one of the other things, if we made a minimum lot area shall be 2 acres, then we'd just be dealing with grandfathering and cleaning up the problem over time. Rather than allowing new stuff in.
I think that if you can have a larger minimum lot area, it's going to help you in the long run.
But a lot of those are 1 acre lots.
Mm-hmm.
And they do, the thing is, I don't know that anyone complains if a person has one horse or two.
On an acre, yeah.
On an acre, the problem is above that. I would go 2 acres too with you, but I think that here that doesn't work.
Well, let's get this presented for the public and see what we get in public
today.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then to remove the bad problem, we're going to have to think about how you phase that out. I think when a horse dies or is moved or...
But if something lives 30 years, yeah. I mean, maybe in the case of livestock, if you're non-conforming, you've only gotten, 6 months to clear it up or something.
Or 2 years or something. You've got some period of time that's fixed.
Okay, and so are we putting... Here it says more than 2 birds or mammals.
That's for the control of manure.
Right, okay. So we're limiting how many horses, or we're limiting how many cows, how many chickens. I mean, some people, they get an acre, they think they have a farm.
Mm-hmm. You can raise 300 chickens on an acre real easy.
Right, and so that's the question. I mean, there's the turn towards people wanting to, for sustainability reasons, have chickens and
mm-hmm.
maybe mm-hmm. a pig and...
Mm-hmm.
You know, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
It's becoming more popular.
Right.
More
eggs, chickens, etc.
And so the question is, how many mammals? One pig, two horses. I mean, after a while, on an acre.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Let me check with one of the gals that runs the neighborhood association. One of them in Bend just went through this very experience. Let me find out what's normal for them in an urban area. She had a heck of a time. Now that we're on CD, I can't swear anymore.
Right, yes.
And I'll find out what she was allowed to have, because you don't want too many chickens in a neighborhood. That could be really bad.
Yeah.
Right. Asking. Okay. We're going to start saying that. Because right here it says 2 birds. I'm thinking, okay, you need more than 2 chickens.
Yeah, exactly.
you know, but what is normal to provide for a family.
Well, we're going to have to provide a standard because, you know, people can argue both ways forever, so we're going to have to stick with something.
I think you need to, I don't like it when you get into, is it a nuisance to the neighbor? That just causes neighborhood fights. You need a number, and so you got to make sure it's below, that's easily handled on that property. There's no, and you could have, if you're trying to think of a way of getting rid of a large abuser, could you say you get it, you can have X amount. If you exceed this many, you have 30 days to bring it into compliance.
Oh man, that's so harsh for somebody who's got horses.
90 days, whatever.
Okay, if you guys
want to put that on.
Because I was thinking like 2 years.
That's way too much, 2 years.
2 years?
Somebody, I mean, if they've got horses and they're inside the city limits, that's ridiculous. I've seen these have two or three horses on a little tiny piece of roof that isn't much bigger than this in here, and the four horses don't have enough to eat.
You can't handle maneuver for nine horses on an acre that has a house and a driveway.
Okay, if we go 90 days, let's start with 90 days and see what kind of status
six
we get.
I'm just throwing in, you guys live here. I'm the one that's getting the calls, but if you get
No. I'm not saying that. I'm just thinking to myself.
If you're told to get rid of six horses, it's going to take some time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing of it, too. What do? Shoot them? I mean,
no.
You know, you have to get rid of them. And, and a lot of these horses... What I'm hearing is some of these horses are coming because other people couldn't take care of them.
Well, but they just can't come into the city.
Well, that's it. They keep bringing them in.
Okay. So I'm gonna, for the sake of moving on, I'm going to put 90 days in here. And if the community says, no, we need like 6 months because of these reasons.
Well, and maybe we could contact some of the rescue organizations because I know there's quite a few in Bend, actually.
Are we just really talking about one property that has more horses?
I don't know. So far, those are the calls.
Well, I've seen about three that have too many horses for the size of the area that they're in.
I don't know.
I would not treat a horse that way. You know.
But then a lot of these people, I mean, you say that you don't have room and stuff like that, but a lot of these people do take their horses out regularly and ride them. I mean, it has to do with the owners, too, how they treat their animals.
Right. So how do you maintain it?
You can't...
You're not ready for the people who maintain things. You're ready for the people who abuse it.
When you go by a place and the poor horse is standing there and he's in mud this deep and there's no room for him to get around and stuff, that's just irresponsible.
And not only that, they have hay in there that's moldy and everything else. There's no feed for them. I mean, it's
terrible. See, that's a whole other thing. Yeah. That's animal cruelty.
Right.
That needs to be
addressed.
But there should be a lot more chance you're having of animal cruelty, too.
We really should think seriously, though, about the fact that I think if times get worse, we're going to have more people that are on an acre that maybe want to raise a pig, or they want to or they want to raise one cow or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
You know, there's the deer and elk and stuff all over the ground out there now. So, I mean, it's not like there's not animals there, but we shouldn't just exclude it completely, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, and if you have a plan for dealing with waste and smell, there may be times when, you know, having X number of animals on a property is completely appropriate.
Well, because you're raising them under a conditional use where you would have to show you have a plan and you're doing that.
And then if they violate, you have something to come back on.
Yeah,
that's what I So you're going to write something in that they have to have a plan for getting rid of the waste that's there?
Yeah, I'm going to have more specific language on species, the maximum, and then the phase out over time. I'm really worried about 90 days because it...
Well, make it longer.
Well,
it's
6 months.
2 years. There's a long way between 90 days and a little year.
Six months is a season.
Yeah, let's go 6 months. I feel more comfortable with that. Because that motivates somebody and it's doable in 6 months. Mm-hmm. Campgrounds. Minimum lot size, 2 acres. If somebody wants to create a new campground, I think 2 acres is the min. Same thing with stormwater. You can't be any closer than 75 feet of a neighboring lot line.
For what?
For a campground.
Oh, I think it's a stormwater.
So this is for commercial use? Yes. 75 feet enough. It's more than the minimum width of a residential lot. Kind of makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you'll have buffers through site plan and fencing and screening.
Yeah.
Well, they would have to apply for a permit and everything
yes.
for that. Yeah.
The most fun one. Junk.
How do you define that?
That's right. We all know how to go to junk. One person's junk is somebody else's.
A worn, cast off, or discarded articles or material which is ready for destruction or which has been collected or stored for sale, resale, salvage, or conversion to some other use. Any such article or material which is stored on a farm for exclusive use of the owner or occupant. It's not needed to be disassembled or unfastened from, unchanged without further reconditioning, can be used for its essentially can't be used for its original purpose as readily as when new. So, you know, those are considered junk.
That sounds good.
Definition.
That sounds good. Somebody else's treasure. Do we have any junkyards in the park
right now?
Official junkyards.
No,
but you have places where junk is accumulated.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
We have some places that have five or six old mobile homes in various states.
Oh, yeah, and mattresses and everything else.
Yeah. No, but I would consider various stages of decay.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you look at regulating how people can store or sell junk, we have to have a section.
Okay.
And that's what this section does for you.
So how would this affect the person down the block that right now has got all kinds of stuff in their front yard?
Well, under the regulations, we talk about what you can do on premises. So we have some of that. So let's just say on page 27, you've got to have a license if you're going to operate a junkyard. And that goes over those specific steps.
Well, technically, I think I have one, actually, that was a junkyard right next to our property. Okay? Now between the trailer park and us. And they do still sell stuff off of there because it's part of an estate. The older guy passed away.
So is it like garage sales on the weekend or is it all the time?
No, it's more like they have some... Right now, it's mostly being stored there because... Like I said, the old guy passed away, and it's his family who owns it. And they'll periodically have people come in and buy things off, like, old vehicles.
Things that have been there. They're not bringing stuff in.
No. Not currently. No.
Yeah, that's a little different.
But down the street from us, there's a couple of kids that run between 5 and 20 cars at a time. Sometimes they all get pretty much gone, and then... 3 weeks later, there'll be 10 more show up there. So.
But people are, you know, a lot of these where they have accumulated stuff are having yard sales or are having, and I guess that's kind of what I was, you know, where I was going with this.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, now are these people, you know, going to be considered
junk
a junkyard or what?
Well, the difference with junkyard, we have a definition in here, and junkyard is talking about, you know, how much of your lot is dedicated to those types of things that I was referring to in the operable, and then junkyard, and it talks about being outside, and it talks about junkyard shall include an automotive wrecking yard and or essentially three or more unregistered and inoperable vehicles stored outside of a building on a property. You know, the difference is if they were registered and they were operable, then you're not a junkyard, you're an auto sales lot, which is also something that's regulated. You want that in a residential area. So there's kind of that fine line. But again, you're looking at all of these items like this end up being those things people have done for years. Or are they, I'm not speaking for or against it, how do you want the neighborhoods to develop and
well,
in the
future?
It's hard to zone against one, or to write regulations against one type of situation.
But it's that's true, but it's also the complaint we hear time and time again.
Yeah.
So-and-so has, you know, 50,000 ketchup bottles on their front porch. Is it more than 200 square feet of any lot area? If it is, it's a junkyard and we're going to regulate it.
Okay, that's what I guess I was getting to.
Or it's a secondhand store and it's a retail business.
Yeah.
And now you have to meet those kind of regulations.
somebody who has repeat garage sales on the weekend, you almost can never regulate that because everybody's allowed to have a garage sale.
We have one that's continuous down.
And that you'll just have to put up with unless they cross the line and all of a sudden they're storing stuff outside beyond the 200 feet.
Well, we have the situation up here where they have a swap meet on the week up by Wikia, up, you know, and they're just throwing stuff over and it just goes on.
Is that
on.
In the commercial zone though?
Yeah, actually.
I'm just curious what the hell when it starts snowing.
I don't know. They'll probably take it down, but I mean, it just stays there. They just cover it with tarps. We've had a few people in town that have done that, too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just goes on and on and on.
And you have those things that go, they do go on and on and on, and is it a bad thing, or are they anomalies? And sooner or later, they will go away. And the one I think of all the time is, as you're driving into Bend from the south, as you get to kind of where... Is it Division Street comes in? There's a 7-Eleven there on the left side. This guy that always has a truck selling oranges.
Yeah, exactly.
He owns that piece of dirt.
I wonder
if he did that. All those streets.
Yeah.
Historically.
He has been there forever.
Mm. The truck's been there forever.
Selling oranges. And so, is it something that, does it have approved parking and driveway access? No, but he's been there forever and he can continue to operate forever. Some of those you're going to just have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Is this a junkyard ordinance or is this the whole nuisance ordinance that you're talking about?
No, it's specific to the definition of junk and junkyard.
Okay, so that's different than clutter around the house?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because kind of the way that it works is that if you want to establish a junkyard, these are what you have to follow to establish a junkyard. And if you're doing this without the necessary permits, then you get into...
Well, I like your definition of three cars. If you have more than three that don't run, that's...
Yeah. Unless you're a restorer of vehicles mm-hmm.
and covered up.
Typically those are
registered. But you can cover it up.
Yes. Cover it up, go to service and repair.
Because we do have a lot of people around here that restore old cars.
What you're going through, I'm seeing you listening to you, and I kind of chuckle, it's a typical of people want to clean up their town until you go to do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can't make Laplane cleaner.
Yeah.
If the guy with 10 horses gets to keep 10 horses, the person with 5 or 10 junk cars in the front yard gets to keep them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so you have to decide, am I willing to, do I want this town cleaned up or not?
Yeah. And what's your guiding principle? Back in the comp plan, we said we wanted to do this. Mm-hmm. That we had to move in this direction.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like it's coming from nowhere. The community has expressed through your group, mm-hmm. all those public meetings in the council, that this is the direction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So when people say, hey, we don't want to do this, you know.
So we all want to go over and close down the guy that set up over there by the library and they had that junk across the fire hall and that little wooden whatever it was. Mm-hmm. I had people complaining about it. Well, these laws would probably allow it because he's selling and doing all this and he just got crap everywhere. The reality is it may get one, two blocks away that you weren't thinking about and they're your friends you play bridge with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the reality.
Mm-hmm. And all the tough stuff's at the front of this code, sorry.
Yes.
But you have to get
it's interesting.
Yeah.
But you will have a separate section for,
nuisance.
What'd you call it? Nuisance stuff around houses?
Nuisances. Attractive nuisances are typically through your municipal code. We'll talk about things that need to be clear in the setback area so you can't clog that up. So, you know, we'll get at it one way. But if somebody has a dead animal on their property, there are different codes that are not in zoning that will take care of that. That's more of a municipal code. And that's
like a police act.
Civil police, criminal actions.
Well, what I was thinking specifically was there's a guy that must have 7 or 8 old mobile homes that he's gradually disassembling.
Mm-hmm. That would be more than the three vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's not his business and he's not, if he's not in a commercial zone and he's operating a business there, and that's not going to fit under home occupation because you can see it,
mm-hmm.
and it's offensive, or he has more than the three vehicles, he's going to fall into one of those categories where he's restricted.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we would handle that.
The first option is you look at the code and say, is there any way that we can find, that we can permit what it is on your property? We try to work with you. How can we mm-hmm. find, what is it you want to do, and can we find a way in here to allow you to do that?
Mm-hmm.
That should be the mentality. And if there's not, That means all this work that you did over a period of a year had forethought about that situation. Said, I'm sorry, we tried to find something, but there's not, so you have to stop. And it's back to exactly what Rick said is.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think all this stuff in Junk's pretty straightforward. There's not anything you disagree with. Take a look at that. If you think we've missed something, we can stuff it in. But I'd like to get to page 29 and get through cemetery landfills, which is kind of a no-brainer because we're not going to have too many of those. But we could. I mean, we have some big chunks of land, and it's possible there could be a transfer station or something developed. So just assume for the moment that we're not going to have that, but we do have some regs in here just in case. Accessory dwellings. This is one that comes up all the time. Somebody builds 15 garages on their property and it drains onto the neighbor's garden. And you see that a lot, or it's clogging up the side yard setback, or this person has three driveways, things like that. So under accessory dwellings, we're saying only one may be created on every single family dwelling lot.
I have a question on that. I'm thinking of mother-in-law units, you know, where they may be in a unit. And it says something about, in no case shall it be more than, oh no, that wasn't it. It was about the distance from the house. I had a problem with that because sometimes, especially with the weather and stuff like that, they'll want to build a decking between, you know, a covered decking so they can get back and forth.
Okay.
And
did we have a connectivity limitation? Let me see.
So you're speaking specifically of a dwelling.
Yes.
Where somebody, place somebody lives in.
Yes.
Okay. Not like public houses.
Are you talking about a medical hardship type thing?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You can have a medical hardship, right, Deb?
Yes, anywhere.
Anywhere.
Yep.
So if you've got the relative that needs to be there because they're there, and you need to build this little cover because they are in a wheelchair to get over. Now, if it's the traditional mother-in-law unit, that has nothing to do with health.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just...
Just to get her out of the main house.
Yeah, you don't want her living in the house.
It's the kids and their kids.
Yeah.
And
so that almost becomes a duplex.
Well, you run into, it's a building code issue and definition issues. What happens is if you have accessory dwelling, and it could be tiny, it could be 500 square feet, and you connect them, the building code calls that one structure, and then it becomes a duplex, just like Rick said. So I was making a note that what we may say... accessory dwelling that's connected, even though it's one structure, building code wise, is that as long as it's under a certain size, so you're not getting too big, full blown.
Right. Well, I know that's allowed because, you know, I know people that have done it. But here, because of the weather and everything, sometimes they do need to get back and forth and they have to be close.
But again, we're in Lapine where you have, you know, you could have snow 6 months out of the year where you want that covered connection, and whereby if you had a 2,000 square foot house and a 2,000 square foot house connected, I mean, you can get two full on families living there in a single family district. Whereas if you limit the size where it's 500 or 600 square feet, it has
a
living area, bedroom, bathroom,
and
kitchen. You can't fit all of us living in there.
Okay, so min size.
Yeah.
So we don't get in trouble.
Allow connection and minimize the size.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's basically just because of the, you know, the weather problem.
Connection. Okay. Now I don't see the distance thing you're.
No, I don't know where. I know I saw that somewhere.
Maybe it's later. We'll double check that.
Okay.
Because we can word search for that. And then no greater. We need a no greater size. Yes, we need them. Sometimes they're used for extended family.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, in this day and age, it's okay. I like it because I think it helps us get used to density.
Oh, I like it to have the second home. Mm-hmm. That, what I find with medical hardships, you never get rid of them.
No.
One grandma dies.
Oh, somebody else does.
Oh, they run them out. They rarely do you ever get rid of the medical hardship.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my client normal.
Mm-hmm. And like I said, I don't mind because I think it helps people get used to density over time. Okay, home-based business.
Okay, I noticed you stressed sawmills, but what about small-scale milling?
a lot of people have the mailing machines in their garage.
Do they?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Home mailing?
Yeah, it's small scale, you know. It's
custom mailing?
Yeah. Okay. But I do know quite a few people that mail their own lumber.
It would probably be allowed under the first four criteria, though it's the fifth one. So not produce offensive noise, vibration, smoke, or other particulate matter.
That's a tough one. Now, let me ask you this question. For the people you know who are doing the milling, are they far away from other homes? So the
well, we're on 5-acre parcel. Well, that one's the one up the street is 2.5.
So that there's a size thing that helps buffer the noise.
Yeah. Okay. I have never even heard them. Ever. But I guess because it's done in the garage and...
Okay.
But that's just one person. I do know other people that, and I've never talked to them about it.
You know, that's something that I didn't even consider. It's such a rarity anymore to find somebody who can actually mill custom lumber.
Yeah.
They should be advertising because I could have used them.
They are
business.
It's a pretty small use. I mean, do they still make that equipment?
Yes.
Okay, large land area commercial or recreation. So, for example, and I'm not saying it would happen here, but you have some sort of outdoor sport activity. I hate to even say it. Driving range, water park, those kinds of things. Sometimes they are allowed inside cities. A lot of times they just go to the fairgrounds and operate there. But in some cases, particularly with land, that's going to be transferred.
What's the issue?
Rodeos, things like that.
Oh.
For commercial recreation, we have to have some regulations. So think of where the rodeo land, if that ever gets to us, the lower left part of the city, it does abut some lands to the south that could be considered residential.
The other things that crop up every so often are racetracks for stock cars.
Well, I'm assuming that's going in the industrial park.
I bring it up because in Cottage Grove, there's one that was there for, that's been there since the dawn of man.
Well, we don't have
and, yeah, we don't and, have land to do anything.
Well, now
like
the
that.
People, two or three people are complaining about it, even though it was there before they ever moved in and the whole bit.
Yeah. How about if we just prohibit that right now?
What's that?
No stock cars. That under large land commercial recreation.
I don't see where we could possibly do that.
You'd be surprised how small a place they can get them in.
I mean,
let's just say no. Because the rodeo is more of what we wanted to do in the comp plan is get that in. But we didn't want to use up that land for anything else.
Well, I know the car club's always looking for land where they can race.
Well, I realize that, but where in Lapine?
They go to Madras.
Milliken wants them, so
Mm-hmm. an abandoned airport.
Well, we could ban racetracks.
Yeah, I think we should. I'm glad you brought it up, because if there's a hint of it, we should probably say no.
A what?
If there's a hint of it, we should probably say no.
So if NASCAR wanted to come to Lapine, we would say no.
Well, what you can do a zone change. Always.
Yeah, this isn't written in stone. I'm not, if you feel
if NASCAR wanted to come, I would let them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, in an urban area? I would say just outside the urban area and then get all the commercial businesses.
But we'd have to go, like, into the industrial.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to do a single use like that that doesn't...
I'm just kidding.
Okay.
Jeez.
It's late, so...
Yeah, we could... Maybe tie it in with the runway?
The airport. A circular runway? That's a challenge.
That's just the straightaway.
Okay, we're getting punchy. Should we take a 5 to 10 minute
break? We need a break so they can go to the bathroom and stretch.
Yeah, I think
I'll tell you this. If they think they're going to get noise from BioGreen, all they need to have is a stock car race. With lights. I live in Vallejo or in Petaluma, California. I live across the interstate highway, Interstate 5, or not 5, but 101. And on the other side is the fairgrounds, and they had stock car races
every weekend, all summer long. And you could hear it for miles.
Yeah.
That's same in Cottage Grove, you can hear it halfway across town.
Sure. I mean, the fairgrounds, you can hear it 5 miles away.
Yeah.
At, in Deschutes County Fairgrounds. I mean, when they have those monster truck things. Okay, we're at page 31. We're making progress. We're not going to get to subdivision tonight. But we'll get close, maybe.
Well, I'm with you on those horses. It really irritates me when I see them abused like that. Yeah.
That's me, too. I was raised on a ranch, and you just don't abuse animals like that.
Well, I worked on my uncle's ranch most of my life, and I'll tell you.
Nice herd out 2 days ago on that property just north of town, that Beyond property.
Get out!
Yeah, running right out across there, about 30 of them.
Wow.
I was quite surprised.
I scared a four-point mule deer out of my yard today, but not soon enough. He devastated several of my plants.
Yeah, they mowed my wife's plants down, too.
Oh, boy. But he was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a place out on Lawrence Meadow Road, and my house is just 200 feet off Lawrence Meadow. And I've had as many as 7 bucks in the front yard all at the same time. And some of them were over and laid down, and they were there for almost by the time the sun came up the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a house over here within 200 feet, a house over here within 200 feet, and they knew they were perfectly safe.
Yeah.
Right across the road is some BLM land.
Well, see, I got a deer tag this year for the BLM property behind my house, and one of them should be stupid enough to walk back there like 2 days ago.
Whoops.
Yes, that would be great.
No, they all go straight away.
There's too many of them.
Yeah, we have a herd behind us.
Well, they've been eating my tree seed for 3 years, so I'm going to eat them. That's the whole purpose of it.
Okay. I had 5 bucks in the yard last week, and I live on the inside of Bend, on the west side of Bend, and I had five seated in the front yard.
That's where they go.
Five together.
Yeah,
two of them were.
Thank you.
They always come in town during hunt season.
Oh, right? I know. We have.
They're smart.
The first day there were three.
But that's
the
smart.
I know it. I know it.
Okay. We ready?
We invest in Bob-X.
I'm the only one who drinks water.
No. Oh,
may I suggest we just go 20 minutes more?
Yes.
Thanks. Okay. That's my arm. We're going to get touched. Okay, so Section 702, additional commercial regulations for commercial zones. So we have some things in here that are necessary to regulate uses. So corner lots, we've got some regulations there. Any business that's completely enclosed, we have some regulations for that. And it's really more about how the physical nature of the commercial zones operate. So these regulations are for commercial uses.
And that would not have to do like with flea markets or
if they're in a commercial zone.
Okay.
So we want to make sure that they're behind the setback lines and on the right of way, the driveways are appropriate. No matter what the use, we have to have those basics covered.
Okay. And what about like the white school or whatever it's called now, the park building over there where they have inside where it's just for events, that would follow a different, totally different.
The uses permitted, how they use the interior separate. If there was a traffic problem, like they were clogging the streets, we may have to, through site plan approval, know what kind of activities they do inside. If they had bingo night 3 nights or 7 nights a week and they were attracting 200 cars, there's going to be an impact that we have to regulate somehow.
Okay. Okay, that's something good to know.
Let's see. I don't see anything else.
Can I ask one question on 702.1, number 4?
Number four.
Any business establishment shall deal directly with the consumer only, and any work done on the premises shall be for sale on the premises. I don't get that. What does that mean? Consumer only. Who else are they going to deal with?
Well, for example,
so they can be like a middleman?
It's trying to be like warehousing, essentially, or like
somebody brings in stuff temporarily.
Redistribution warehouses.
We don't want that. I mean, that's like
we can make that more clear.
I mean,
I
mean, for example, let's say Walmart was talking about going to Christmas Valley and putting in a distribution center where their trucks would go and then they would redistribute. That's not something we want in Lemhi. I mean, I don't know. I just am curious.
What I meant was wholesaling. Because it's trying to get away from, this is the commercial zone,
mm-hmm.
so it's trying to say that it's for you coming in to buy something retail,
mm-hmm.
As opposed to
buildings with blank faces where you're not getting the activity that's anticipated.
Something that would be like more conducive to the industrial zone.
Oh, okay. So
does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. So
I will just clean up that.
This is a commercial, and where those would go in industrial. Okay, that's
fine. You typically don't have that problem because it's cheaper for commercial to go in industrial rather than industrial type used to go in commercial.
Okay.
But I can write that better.
Yeah.
No, I just was wondering. I was. I should have realized what zone we're talking about.
There's a problem in Bend in downtown Wall Street where you have a huge chunk of land that's just used for warehousing. It doesn't contribute anything to downtown. And it clogs up things when the semis are there.
Oh, okay.
That's
still
commercial.
Buffering and screening in 702. These are typical screening requirements. I don't think this would cause any problem in Lapine. And it helps with drainage, snow storage, vegetation. What?
Go ahead.
Oh.
I guess what I will throw in there is I always try to tell you guys how these are put into practice, because it's one thing reading them, but then how are they put into practice?
Mm-hmm.
If somebody was coming to do a new development application in Lapine and said, hey, I want to build X, Y, and Z, they would have to show on their application how they meet all these standards. Okay, so just, again, reinforcing, you would look at their plan. And so think about, when someone's designing a plan, people that want to start new businesses, do these work? Are they obstacles? So, just putting them into practice.
So, if we had a buffer strip of 60 feet, that wouldn't work because it uses up too much land. Is 10 a good starting point? Especially when you're trying to buffer a commercial use from a residential zone. Is 10 enough? And in 10 feet, you can grow things. It may not be big enough for all drainage and snow removal, but it would be a buffer along the entire line. And we're saying that you have to use a fence or you plant evergreens so that you get the screening effect either from vegetation or mechanical means like a fence, physical means. We're also saying we're going to be pretty much sticklers about when it goes in. We're not going to give people time to do it after they're occupying the premises, that it has to go in before they occupy the building, which will help you with enforcement. If you let them dink around with it after they've opened, you'll never get it. And then that way you don't have to deal with bonds or anything. You want to open? You got to get this done.
What about three? You've got shall be planted with grass. As an alternative, with water the way it is that a good idea?
Well, if you're putting all your natural drainage swale there, you could use native grasses. We're not specifying the type of grass.
Well, see what they've done in the front of the library. You know, they've used rocks and grass.
The xeriscape approach.
Yeah.
So let me clarify that so that we focus on a xeriscape.
The other thing, too, I'd like to see an emphasis on, you know, natural things that we have in the area.
Good point.
For a lot of
vegetation.
Not necessarily limited to, but encouraged.
Yeah, and as part of our services to the community, when people come in and they get a site plan application and we want to encourage, like you said, natural plantings, we'll get a list from the local nursery. And I spoke with her recently, and she's really interesting, and she's keeping a list of things that grow well in this area.
Good.
And we can give that to developers.
Okay.
We have additional industrial zone regulations. We want to make sure that access points are appropriate. And I'm moving on to industrial zone. Are you okay with moving on?
Okay.
We want to make sure that accessory storage of junk is either screened or in an enclosed structure. We don't want things left out. I think that's important in an urban area. Same thing with storm drainage. Areas that are not used have to be maintained and mowed in a fire zone. That's really important. Parking has to be 5 feet away from the road right-of-way, so we have separation. Lighting, typical, shielded and directed down. And then we'll have a connection to our lighting code. Because industrial uses produce waste, we've stuffed in some language about pollution control so that we have something to fall back on. Where any industrial use abuts a residential zone, the buffer strip is greater. So we've got 30 feet if you abut a residential zone. Little stronger requirements on the kind of vegetation. And I don't think that's unusual. And we'll add in the same language about natural species. We'll copy that over from commercial. In some cases, people are going to have natural vegetation that they can use. We don't want them to remove natural vegetation if it's performing the job of screening. So if somebody's got a whole bunch of jack pine or lodgepole pine, and it's in their buffer area, in that 30-foot area, leave it. Maintain it, but leave it. And I think that's helpful. Let's see, different sections. You've got to maintain your separation areas. That's nothing unusual. Back to mineral excavation. If somebody's excavating sand or soil, I should put soil in there too, because some people will excavate if they find a pocket. And in this state, you have to have a DOGAMI, Department of
Geology
and Minerals or something. So there's going to be a permit required if somebody does achieve the ability to mine or excavate. Cell towers, wireless to telecommunication.
You have one typo on page 37. Number two, first sentence, no more than 20, and then parentheses 100.
Gotcha.
Okay.
I don't know which one it is.
Yeah, I have a question mark on that.
You jumped ahead.
Okay, wireless to telecommunication. How many cell towers are we going to allow in the town, or are we?
Well, there's several technologies.
Make them look like pine trees. Those aren't bad looking things.
There's the PCS system, and there's another system that's used. AT&T wants to expand their 3G, 4G, and 5G services. We all want those services. Mm-hmm. The question is, where is it appropriate to have towers and antenna? If you can put an antenna on a building and it works for the parameters that the provider needs to serve, great. We should allow that. If somebody wants to build a 300-foot tower in the middle of an established residential area, that's a tougher sell. Mm-hmm.
How many do we have right now? Just the one?
I'm just familiar with one area.
I can't think that you would have inside the city limits. What'd you say?
It's flat.
I was just going to say, because it's so flat, you would have the one. There's somewhat some of the buttes outlying the pine. And along the highway to corridor, I mean, that's the most. I don't see it being a big issue. Really not.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. That doesn't make sense to have too many here. But we do have the one. I don't know where it came from, but all of a sudden it was here. And now we're using it as, you know, that's 100 feet or that's 150, and we're comparing everything to that. So it's become an issue.
Well, and the technology will change, and there will be limitations on what that tower can hold. At some point, there will be a replication of it because of the services that people are wanting to get on their cell phones that don't turn off. TV, radio, all that's going to come through here, and they have to have that ability.
And more providers will want to provide that service, so they'll need their own individual towers.
Mm-hmm. And that does that fall under, like, franchise fees or
anything? The FCC regulates the frequency and gives people a certain time to prove up on it.
Okay.
So you'll see TV, radio, internet. There's one other technology that's going to come through, and they all need to have sites. But if your one tower can handle that, great. If it gets loaded up, they'll need another tower or bounce it off the buildings with their antennas.
So each one of these things will they come before the city council then? Or?
It needs to come through as a permit because it's a change in the land use, so it has to be evaluated. And the kinds of things you evaluate are limited to the size and shape and placement on the property. You can't regulate the frequency or get into things that the FCC protects. You can't say we think it's going to harm animals and therefore we can't do it. There are certain things the FCC protects that trump anything you can do. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be size and shape and where it's located on the property.
Okay.
What about existing stuff that's already there?
We need to allow it. And then any additions or extensions, for example, if you had a 150-foot tower and they wanted to, and this happens, they wanted to extend it by 50 feet, we should look at that.
Mm-hmm.
We'd want evidence that the engineering is capable of supporting it, because once you get up to a certain height, you don't want it to fall down on the neighboring property. So we ask for them to submit data certifying that it's built properly.
There's one privately held communications tower that's down off of about 4th or 5th Street on the west side.
Oh,
on
the other side. Okay, yeah, there is one down there.
And I've looked at that several times and wondered how that is permitted and if it was engineered or not, because it could fall across property line. Yeah. What about something like that?
Well,
what do you normally do with that kind of thing?
In our area, we're lucky. It's not like in the Midwest where you get cold, freezing rain that builds up ice on the wires and then things fall over. That's the big problem with cell towers. That's when they collapse. I represent cell tower companies in other areas, so I'm very familiar with the problems that they have. We rarely have that problem here. As long as you get an engineer certification that it'll bear the weight and it's guided properly, there really isn't that much to worry about. So it's a different situation than back east where you get ice buildup. Here, it's very rare to have a tower collapse unless it's got an engineering problem to begin with. And what I think is safer is that they submit evidence of what their fall pattern would be. Most of the towers are built so that they collapse as they fall.
Mm-hmm.
So they just don't go over, but sometimes they can, but most of the time they'll collapse on themselves, and then the followers may be only 25.
Well, this tower, this particular tower looks like it was built and designed by Joe.
Oh.
And this is something that was up way before the city was ever here.
Is it a ham radio tower?
I think there's a ham tower on it, but there's also TV.
They got a bunch of guy wires coming down to hold it up.
Yeah, there are still a few.
Okay.
So I don't know if the city has a, is that something that, that type of thing that shows up that could be a public nuisance needs to be looked at or not, is what I'm asking.
See if it was ever permitted?
Is it actually in the city limits? I'm not sure.
Oh yeah, it's in the city limits.
Well, because that would be the question. Was there ever a permit?
Yeah.
Well,
and if there's an engineering design board, it meets the standards. And
right. It's a structure, and it seems to me it would be regulated by the maximum height in the residential zone.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can go to 45 feet in the residential zone and the ham tower's below that, it's a structure, it's privately owned.
Yeah.
It's not much you can do about it. But, you know, if it's structure, mm-hmm. it needs to be, get some sort of footing permit, I would think. But I'll look into ham towers.
Well, ham towers, you want me to jump into them?
Yes, please.
Ham towers are one of those things that go way back, and it's an antiquated, but maybe not so, law that says ham radio operations were part of federal emergency
mm-hmm.
services.
Okay.
So towers
so they're
under
protected
this exemption.
Too? Okay. Yeah.
So,
yeah. So they're protected by the FCC as well?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll double check on that just in case. One thing under number two, we're probably going to flex that up now that I'm thinking of it. Some equipment buildings have to be larger than 250 square feet, but if they are, let's have them go through a conditional use permit process so they're properly screened and shielded.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds good.
Okay. We've put in a chart to take a look at what's allowed and what's not allowed. And we're seeing that conditional in the residential zones and permitted everywhere else. Make sure you're comfortable with that. Permitted means that they'll go through site plan approval and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But in the residential zones, you have tougher review for appropriate reasons.
Have you intended to cover energy producing devices?
Yes.
Windmills and
yes, in fact, we had some of that in the industrial, but for the new age stuff, we'll want to get to that.
We're going to go ahead and wrap it up.
Yep, I think we're ready.
I just want to note 1-800-4. That made absolutely no sense to me. It didn't read right. 39.
Oh, that's when you own two lots. So if you own two lots, you got your house on one, then your side and rear yard setbacks are as if it's one big lot.
Okay. I understood the concept, it just didn't read right to me.
Okay.
I don't know, it didn't. I had a really hard time making making sense of
okay,
it.
Okay, I'll clean up the language.
What it does though, once you build under that, is then if you want to split those lots up again, you're going to be in violation of the setback. So you kind of
but they would still be two tax lots then?
There'd still be two tax lots, but tax lots and legal lots are
okay.
So, yeah.
Oh, well, maybe that's.
And when we get there, if we think that's too much, we can take it out.
It's really lenient, is what it is.
Okay. Anybody else have something that they. Burning that they missed?
Are we...
Well, I mean, is there something that you really wanted to bring attention to that you saw?
We talked about the kiosks earlier. Uh-huh. I don't... The people who came in late, Rick had asked for this last time to see visuals, and we have one that Oregon is now using in other places. So I'll keep this in our file when we talk about signs and billboards more as the alternative. And I'll keep researching on different designs so that you can see what that means.
Okay.
Gloria, were you looking for an article in the Eagle next month?
Beg your pardon?
Were you looking to be for an article in the Eagle next month?
No, I wrote an article. Well, we'll go on. I'm just going to go on to 8, and then we'll touch on that on 9. This TAC group has 100 people in it, but then there are, or you said there were 100 names.
Well,
or
I just
something
said there's
like
a bunch. I just threw out a lot.
But
there's not 100.
There are various groups that are represented, and a lot of them have worked on their own things. They've worked on plans for the city and, you know, how they think it should look. And I would like to see somehow or another being able to coordinate some of that stuff.
Tell me who they are so that we can invite them to the open house, etc.
Well, what I'm talking about is having them work session or something,
okay,
and having them, you know, at some point, having them bring forth their plans and us all kind of talk, so we're all, you know, we're working toward the same thing. I mean, I see
plans for what, though, Gloria?
The city, how it should look, and
she's trying to get into, you know, the whole thing, a downtown revitalization type look, and
okay.
I mean,
so more physical features of what they want to see in the city?
Right, or, yeah, basically. There just seems like there's a lot of fragmentation and various entities working on certain things. The park and rec is working on stuff. And they're, you know, they're designing things and everything for the park. Well, some of those things affect, like they were talking about lighting. You know, that affects this, I mean, that's a city ordinance even though it's in the park.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the kinds of things that I just wondered if there's possibility of being able to get together and do something.
You're exactly right, and I'm going to go back to the comprehensive plan process. Is during that process, I mean, it's a little longer range rather than where the rubber meets the road. As
right, we're working on this
today.
Right now, yeah.
But and I'll just throw this out there to you. By the same rights, is when the park district is working on those types of things. We have policies in the back of the comp plan that says the city shall bring in groups like the park district and work with them to coordinate plans, so you're exactly right, but so that they don't design something and approve something that's contrary to what you're going to put in your
right.
lighting code. But it also says that should work the other way. So they should be bringing in representatives of the city and say, hey, you know, what you're talking about,
I'm just thinking of somebody coordinating that.
Yeah, that's what we do on the TAC is put the technical people and agencies together.
Yeah.
And the way we've been doing it is to make sure everybody gets an email, because these are people who have daily jobs in government typically. And so we've been emailing the codes to them and getting responses back and making new adjustments and then advising you of those adjustments. What we can do, and because I'm going to produce the TAC list for you, if you can think of people who aren't represented or need to be have a little more outreach, get that to me.
Okay.
And I'll make sure that they get everything and look at it and give them a little brief overview and that kind of stuff.
Well, I'm going to be taking the Ford training, the Ford Institute training, and I know there's going to be a project involved there. I don't know if it's going to be this year or next year.
Okay.
But, you know, those are all things when I go to these different things, I'm hearing we're working on this, we're working on that, and I'm thinking, hey, the city, we
most
need to be involved.
Time, it's not going to be a conflict.
Right.
But making sure that we have that public outreach, that's...
Well, and I know that the redundancy of a lot of it, too. When somebody else has done the work, you know, then we need to,
Sure. You're talking, a lot of times in projects that we work on, you have a technical committee, which is a lot of staff people, engineers, and then you have the citizens, the open houses, and in between that you have the stakeholders committee. Mm-hmm. And those are people that have some interest in what you're doing, but they're not the technical people, but they hold more stature and interest in general and public person showing up with, because they represent a group.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good to know.
Committee.
Well, when I get that tack list, and I'll go ahead too, and I have kind of this myself, and I'll put it together.
Yeah, that'd be very helpful. Okay.
Also, did you get, what did you think of the article that I wrote?
I don't know.
I thought it was fun. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go ahead and email to the other board members, and then I'm going to, it's, and I think I also will,
it's a great thing, outreach thing. I mean,
I think I'll put the calendar of meetings on it also, if that's okay.
And then with the disclaimer that these may be flexible dates depending on the volume activity.
Yeah, okay. All right. Does anybody have anything that they need to report?
Can I just say one really quick thing? With all the meetings that we have planned, do we still have the utilities committee? I really don't see how I'm going to be able to make those meetings and all of our meetings that we have coming up. So I don't know what.
We have
the request of the city was. The city council was that we would have a member from the planning commission, and I said yes, but that was at a time before I realized. And anyway,
we'll see there. How that goes.
Okay.
How's that?
So how about if I let you know I won't be at the next meeting now?
Okay.
I sent you an agenda this afternoon.
Well, I can tell you that, and I told, we're actually canceling our work session next week. That I was trying to explain to him. People need to realize it took 100 years for Bend and Redmond and Prineville and Madras, and people need to back off. This town, I mean, no one could go all the meetings.
No.
I mean, that's why LaPlante, I think, has struggled for 3 or 4 years. People have got to realize that this little city with 2 employees and a part-time manager cannot take on every problem and issue that goes on. And so, like, we got to cancel our meetings because there's so damn many other meetings. And our Public Works Committee, which was the Transportation Committee, they could, gosh, we can't even find time for them to meet.
And there's nothing to meet about until we get the quarter plan done.
Yeah. So it's just, people need, I'm just kind of saying, please.
Meetings are like a virus.
Yes.
So I just thought I'd warn you.
Yeah.
I'm not going to the next thing.
I thought I was the only one that thought that.
No, it's a little bit, people need to understand that we are going to take years to accomplish some of this stuff.
Mm-hmm. But we'll get there.
No, I'm not saying that. It's just that literally, you know, I mean, I got people wanting stop signs all over. They want dead end signs. They want. It's like, what went on prior?
It was chaos.
The city just cannot assume all of this.
Overnight.
And it's really kind of, people are going to have to back off a little.
Can I make a motion to
No, I just wanted to see if anybody else had
anything.
Okay,
good. I make a motion to adjourn.
I second it. Okay, the meeting is adjourned at, all in favor.
Aye.
Adjourned at 6:50.
Did you get a good one?
Oh,
yeah. Next week.